Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Napa Know-How. At Napa Auto Parts stores and Napa Auto Care centers, get a $25 prepaid Visa card when you get any Napa Automotive battery. It's the best deal for some of the best batteries from some of the best car people around. But we might be a little partial. Anywho, pick up any Napa Automotive battery and save $25. Do it yourself or have it done for you. That's Napa Know-How.
Napa Know-How.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores and Napa Auto Care centers, while supplies last, offer ends 8/31/20.
Today's specials, new Chase Freedom Flex with 3% on dining, including takeout. Now every meal comes with a side of cash back. Learn more at chasefreedom.com. Cards are issued by JPMorgan Chase Bank, N.A., member FDIC. Restrictions and limitations apply. Offer subject to change.
Welcome to Collider Live. It is Wednesday. We got very existential on yesterday's show, and I'm very excited for today's show because, holy shit, Scott Mance is here.
Yes!
Greg Alva is also joining us.
I'm so excited.
With a great, great sweatshirt you got
very
there.
Cool.
I know. Thank
I'm
you.
Gonna I'm going to steal it from you.
HBO sent it himself.
Wow, he's wearing it.
Yes. Yes. Take it off. No, I'm kidding. Producer Mark Riley.
Hey,
Mark
Scott Mance and Greg Alva are here.
Mark Riley Doritos.
Doritos here.
I'm
She's
here.
A replicant.
I am a replicant.
And Mark Riley is a Superman.
I am
yes,
a Superman.
What a Superman.
And I'll we try. Also have a Spider-Man in the family because Cody is in the booth with
I'm
Alex.
Really
Cody, how are you doing?
Hey, guys, I'm doing great.
You know in Joker when Arthur Fleck was looking at the audience and going, this is exactly how I imagined it.
Uh-huh.
That is exactly how I'm feeling.
Is it?
Right?
Yeah, me too.
This is exactly how I imagined it.
This is your this is a simulation. We talked about this yesterday on the show, Greg. So.
All of life is a simulation.
Welcome to Collider Philosophy. No, it's so good to finally have you guys. This is your first time on Collider.
First time
live.
A Collider
it's my
live.
First time doing anything with Scott Mance.
Really?
Wow.
What? My first time doing something with Dorina.
I know.
Well, I mean, I haven't done anything with Riley since the old Schmoes Note days.
Schmoes
back
Note
in the
days.
Old
yeah.
place,
yep.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So this is
been
a, this
way
is
too
a
long.
Milestone.
It really is.
I truly.
Mean, so much to talk about. And on
so
a,
much.
In a milestone month.
Yes.
Guys,
this is milestone.
Just lean into
but
it.
Leaning into it because this is November of 2019.
Yes.
And to be sitting next to a fan.
And an actual replicant.
An actual replicant. Yeah. But a massive fan of, seriously, one of the greatest movies ever made.
Thank you, Cody.
Blade Runner. Ooh.
Yeah. Oh. Demonetized.
Officially best episode of Collider Live so far.
Listen to that music. It is just so brilliant. Everything about Blade Runner.
It's the best.
Now, did you see Blade Runner when it came out originally? I'm guessing no.
No, I didn't. I didn't get it.
I saw the theatrical release on TV.
Okay.
When I was a kid.
Okay, so, right, all right.
The one with the narration.
Oh,
and
yeah.
But then I actually got to see the final cut when it premiered, and they played it at the Million Dollar Theater in downtown where they actually filmed the movie. So that was incredible. Like, whatever that was, 2007?
2007. Yes. Oh, right on. Yeah. Give it up with the movie release
Nerds.
Date.
Look at this.
Okay.
Hey, guys.
But, see, now, when I saw the film Blade Runner in Philadelphia, where I grew up, on June 25th, 1982, which is when the original cut came out – you know, I was going into that movie thinking like, oh, my God, it's a sci-fi movie from the director of Alien and Harrison Ford, who just rocked it in The Empire Strikes Back and Raiders of the Lost Ark. This movie's going to be awesome. And I was like, when it was over, I remember walking out into the street going like, what
the hell did I just watch?
But were you confused in both a happy and kind of weirded out way?
I was just confused because of what the movie just was a slow burn, which was not what I was expecting from a sci-fi movie from my generation, also from Harrison Ford.
Mm. Right.
But when I moved out to L.A. in 1991 and I saw at the Noir Theater, the world famous Noir Theater in Santa Monica, they had the very first screening of the final cut, which got rid of the narration and also added in that 30-second bit. of the dream of the unicorn, which, you know, makes it completely obvious that Deckard is indeed a replicant.
Yes, and this is why I love Scott, because he is correct.
Also ties a shared universe to Ridley Scott's other movie, Legend. So.
Oh, well, that's very true. Yeah, yeah. Legend. Right. Legend.
Unicorns.
Yeah, that's true.
1985.
There it is.
Okay, another underrated Ridley Scott movie.
But, boom!
But, you know, Blade
and
Runner,
also Tim Curry's in that. He's amazing. So, you know,
but Blade Runner is a film that I just think just gets better with each passing year. We're still catching up to it. It could have been made today, and it would look just perfect in today's world. What do you think of Blade Runner?
I prefer Blade Runner 2049.
God damn it.
I was going to say,
you are not alone. There's a lot of people in probably
that's
in our chat.
Up.
Yeah.
That people are catching up to that one as well.
Right.
Well, but how old are you?
I am 29.
I wonder if that's a generational thing, because a lot of my friends that are younger in the nerd space, they actually like the sequel better. And I think it's beautiful too. Mm. Like it is groundbreaking visually, but the first one is, to me, is just, it's so poetic and existential, you know, like everything to do with Roy Batty's character. Oh. It's just it's you can completely identify with the supposed villain, because he's just asking for more life, right? He's finding his creator, and he's like, why did you create me, and why is my lifespan so short, and why did you create me to be this thinking conscious being, right?
He is the most human character in Blade Runner. And the thing is, like, when Blade Runner 2049 came out, I was very very skeptical. I mean, you're making a sequel to Blade Runner, but when I realized that Denis Villeneuve was going to be directing it, I was kind of all in, because I loved Arrival and I loved Prisoners.
But Sicario
is great. He's definitely one of the best directors working today. But Blade Runner 2049, while obviously the original film, it means so much to me for so many different reasons, I actually think that Blade Runner 2049 is as good as the original film.
I'm glad we can meet it.
As good.
You don't think that, Doreen?
No,
I'm with them. I love 2049.
I thought I was very – also, like Scott, I was very skeptical when I first saw it. But and then when I heard about the cast and crew, I was like, oh, this could be good. But I just – were so many reboots, I just get scared that they're going to pander to fan service and nostalgia. And they did do it a little bit in this movie. And that's why I wish they had not had the Deckard storyline. I feel like that wasn't necessary other than fan service. I think the way they did it was smart.
Yep.
But I was more interested in the world just that they lived in, you know, where they're living with skin jobs and how society treats them. Like that aspect of it, I was very interested. Visually, it's groundbreaking. It just didn't hit me as hard in the feels as the first one because of what I was talking about. Like that monologue by Roy Batty at the end is the best scene in a movie ever to
me. Absolutely. Tears and Rain. But the other thing about Blade Runner 2049 is you don't see Deckard until near the end of the film. And it works that way. And I remember thinking at the time, and I still feel that way, that that had been Harrison Ford's best performance in a really, really, really long time.
Right.
And just the scenes that he had with Ryan Gosling. Mm-hmm. And I remember the thing that just made me go, okay, I'm really in now, is like, what could the storyline possibly be for Blade Runner 2049?
Right.
And when you finally get to that point, look, the movie's been out for a couple of years. I'm going to spoil it.
Yeah.
When you get to the point where you realize that Rachel and Deckard had a kid, and you go,
spoilers.
Whoa. You just go, oh my gosh. Now that is a story that's worthy of continuing the conversation of what it means to be human.
Yeah.
So Rachel was a replicant. Yeah. You know, Deckard also a replicant.
But then you can debate now that he's aged, he's either another type of replicant or he is human, right?
And they never addressed it.
Yeah,
they never addressed it, which was great.
Which is great.
Yes, absolutely.
I thought Denis came out and said that he treated it as if Harrison Ford was a human, though. He went with the original ending, because I know the cut you were talking about with the unicorn establishes.
So not the final cut.
Yeah, not the final cut.
Why do you like the second one better?
I emotionally latched onto it more. I don't know what it is. There's something about – like Blade Runner, the original, is one of those films that I appreciate so much, yet I just don't emotionally click with it. And then Blade Runner 2049, while it continues tonally along the same lines, and it's not – I was worried Blade Runner 2049 was just going to be, you know, like the more – high-octane, high-energy film, which it is not.
Which is not.
I appreciate they didn't do that. there was – I just kind of clicked more with the emotional journey that Ryan Gosling's character was going on. There's something about – I'm in love with that guy. Well, there's something about it where just I stare at – you've met him before, right?
And, many times.
Well, that when he looks at you, does it like as beautiful as I'd imagine it to
melt your soul.
Well, when he looks at me, he goes, oh, it's the crazy La La Land fan.
Is that for real?
Is that real?
Okay, so
– no, I believe it.
When I was at Comic-Con in 2017, the summer of 2017 –
just oh, look come at, on. Look at those eyes. Get lost in the ocean of those eyes.
So I had you know, I was covering the press line. I was working for Access Hollywood at the time. So, you know, Ryan Gosling's making his way down the line. So, you know, I talked to him. I started talking to him about Blade Runner. So I said – at one point I said, okay, as you know, I am a massive fan of La La Land. And he goes – yes, I know this. So,
as you have a tattoo on your forehead,
I brought my copy of the La La Land Blu-ray that features my interview with Damien Chazelle. So I'm actually on the La La Land Blu-ray as one of the bonus features.
Of course you are.
Can you please sign this for me? So he took it and he finished the line. And I'm like, what happened to my Blu-ray?
Right.
So he just wanted to wait. He just wanted to think about what he was going to write. So he like wrote this whole long thing. He covered the entire Blu-ray.
Wow.
It wasn't just, hey, thanks a lot, you know, Ryan Gosling. And I was like, holy moly. I'm like, I should frame this.
You should.
Did you?
So no, I put it right next to my signed copy of La La Land that was signed by Emma Stone.
Oh, so great.
Perfect. And the altar is where in your home?
Oh,
for
it's,
La
right,
La
it's
Land?
Right in my bedroom. Yeah, first thing I see when I wake up in the morning.
Great, perfect.
I mean, really, can I get through any conversation anywhere without talking
no,
about La
you
La
can't.
Land?
But you know what? I love that you love it because here's the thing. It's funny how that movie actually annoys some people. I think it's one of the best soundtracks we've gotten, especially score-wise.
I agree.
It's a beautiful score. Oh, it's really, really great.
I just don't like the song.
Oh, wait.
You don't like any of the songs?
I love all the songs except
City of Stars.
It's just like I thought Moana was that year.
That's right. 16.
Come on.
La La Land.
Come
on.
No.
Nothing on the
wall.
That is a catchy song, and that is a no.
You will all appreciate this story. So the other day I was at the Arclight in Hollywood where of course, you know, Collider has all their screenings.
Right.
You know, you had the one last night for Knives Out.
Yes, great movie, by the way, guys.
Yeah, great
wasn't
movie.
Invited.
I wasn't invited either.
Well, now you've been on this show.
You better do it
now. Maybe now we can invite you to the next one, right?
Pretty sure you. I think we lost his email or something like that. Didn't we tell him?
Yeah, I think so. I think we recovered your email last night.
You lost it in between asking me last week.
So
I was at the Arclight for – I went to the all media screening for Charlie's Angels.
Knives are out here.
Knives out. The knives are definitely out.
Really good movie.
They won't be for Charlie's Angels, let me tell you. So I'm walking out. I'm walking to my car, and as I'm walking out of the theater at the Arclight, some guy is walking in, and he goes, wait, I know you. I know you, and I just wanted to see if he would get it, you know, like where does he know me from? So he goes, you're on Collider. I said, yes. And he goes, and you love La La Land. And I went, whoa. Oh, man. Okay.
So now you're known for that.
I am known for that, yes.
But yeah, speaking of Knives Out, I got to see it last night at the Collider screening. Mm-hmm. And you've seen it, right,
yes,
Scott?
Yes.
I loved it.
Yep.
It was really great. It made me feel like I was watching Clue when I was a little kid. It was so good. You liked it too, Cody, right?
Yeah, it was a good time.
And that's our review of Knives Out. Collider Live. Moving on.
You should just write Amazon reviews.
Were you guys
it was a good time.
Yeah,
or it's a bad time.
On the back of the Blu-ray is Cody. Yeah, I liked it.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. First of all, it did remind me of Clue. It's a far, far superior film to the original Clue. But I get the nostalgia factor.
Clue is amazing.
Clue, I love, but
Tim Curry.
But I guess if it was going to age, it would look like Knives Out.
Yeah.
But the thing about Knives Out, I felt like this was Rian Johnson's cathartic release to make a movie that he wanted to make without interference, catering to any like fans or whatever. He just made
what
his own
movie. What are you
talking
about, Scott?
Well, as you all know.
We already mentioned it yesterday. And
it just proves my theory.
About it already.
All roads lead back to the Last fucking Jedi.
Last Jedi. What did you think of Last Jedi? Do you think that Rian Johnson just got too much shit?
I'll be
that
honest.
Movie?
Like I went to a press screening for that, unlike Knives Out. So I went to a press screening for it, and I loved it.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, when the movie's released, everyone hates it.
Dude,
and
I was like, what?
Everyone hates this movie?
Man. I walked out of that press screening, and I went, and I was affected. I always say it on Hulu, too, how it affected me, everything like this. And I'm like, dude, fans are going to love this thing.
Yeah, that's what I thought, too.
And, and nope. Boy, I was way off.
I did love half of it.
Okay, which half?
Like the good half.
No, damn you, Dorina.
It's not. No, it's. Look, I. We talked about film criticism in general yesterday.
Yeah.
And I think that in anything that you even hate, you can find something you love. And everything to do with Rey and everything to do with the Force. Everything to do, like Rey, Kylo, Luke, and Yoda. That scene almost made me cry.
Yeah, that was
I thought that was one of the first times in any of the new Star Wars movies that I felt like, other than Rogue One, that I felt like this is Star Wars.
Yeah.
The Luke and Yoda scene, just beautiful. It was handled so well. I got to see Puppet Yoda again. I was freaking out.
Mm-hmm.
Was it the Finn and Rose stuff you weren't a fan of?
Nope, not at all.
Me neither, actually.
Nope, I was very bored during it. I know what they were trying to do. I didn't like the execution of it as all.
Yeah,
it looked beautiful, right? All those scenes were really nice to look at. I just was bored.
I remember when I saw Last Jedi for the first time, and I remember leaning over to my friend halfway through the film. And, you know, during the like casino thing and all that stuff, which
Canto Bites.
It felt like an episode of Battlestar Galactica.
I don't know
Galactica.
Why it came out that way.
You know, it felt like the first episode of Battlestar Galactica.
Are you talking about new VSG or 70s
the
VSG?
The original BSG.
Okay, okay.
You know, when they were on Caroline with the Ovians.
Yeah.
I love both versions, by the way. I love Ron Moore's version of BSG.
Oh, yeah.
But I remember I leaned over to my friend and I said, boy, this is really kind of slow. So I didn't hate it, but I didn't love it. There were things I liked about it. There were things I didn't. Regardless, I think that Rian Johnson just took way too much heat for that movie.
Yes. Yeah.
Now, here's the question.
Everybody in the franchise space takes too much heat for every movie they make.
Oh, yeah. I think across the board, everybody's got targeted at one point for, like, just showing up on screen. Fuck that person!
Yeah.
But it's like, what? I'm just a rebellion pilot.
I was so excited to be on Collider Live today. First of all, to share a conversation with you fine folks.
But
for the most part, like I wanted to ask the question because I was thinking about this last night while I was like going all through Disney Plus and I watched Mandalorian just like everyone else. But I also watched The Empire Strikes Back. That was the first thing I watched because that is just –
because it's the best.
It's the best. It's not just the best Star Wars movie ever by far. It's one of the greatest – movies ever made, right up there.
Thank you.
With Blade Runner.
Yep, it is, I agree.
It is just
it's in my top five movie all time.
Same.
Ever. Ever.
Yeah.
It's, really,
it's just
great.
One of those movies that gets you every time. The effects, how they pulled off, like Lucas saying, okay, we are in space and everything. Let's go on a snow planet where the mat is going to show unless we do something and advance the technology. I love
right.
that.
And not just the way it looks, but that whole everything to do with Yoda and Luke again in Dagobah.
Yeah.
That's the Star Wars that I like when they talk about the Force in such a mythological way.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's Star Wars to me.
Okay,
right?
Good.
So no midichlorians.
I'm glad you brought that up, Dorian, because here's my question. Here's my question. I thought about this watching Mandalorian, and I want to know what you all think of that. But the question I started thinking to myself is. Over the last year –
spoilers, by the way. No spoilers.
No spoilers.
No spoilers for Mandalorian.
No spoilers for Mandalorian. But we can spoil Solo because Solo was spoiled. And Last Jedi, not a great movie, not a bad movie, but just – okay, you know, it has its merits.
Sure.
And then there's Rogue One, which I fucking loved.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then there is The Force Awakens, which I thought was fine. But now that Star Wars really as a whole is sort of at a crossroads, like where does it go? Like, where does it go?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you lost the Game of Thrones guys for a whole new trilogy. And I was thinking about this last night. Here's the question. What does Star Wars mean to you? What is truly a Star Wars movie? And I'm asking that question because as my real favorite series and franchise, Star Trek,
mm-hmm.
has evolved over the years,
mm-hmm.
there are certain things about it that keep it Star Trek. Even when Deep Space Nine sort of did its own thing in the 90s, still felt like Star Trek to me because it was about the striving for the perfection of humanity, never actually getting there. But see, that's what I think Star Trek is really ultimately about. But Star Wars is obviously very different. So as Star Wars grows, it needs to take chances.
Yeah.
Rian Johnson tried to take chances with The Last Jedi,
yep.
and he got a lot of unfair criticism for it.
Right.
So now you had the Mandalorian, Jon Favreau, creating this vision of a Star Wars universe within the Star Wars universe.
With Dave Filoni directing the first episode, coming off of Clone Wars and Rebels.
I loved it.
Yeah.
I loved the Mandalorian.
Good.
Why?
But what did it have that was Star Wars-esque in terms of spiritual that you actually think really
right.
hits the nail for
Okay,
it?
That's – where I felt like it was missing that.
Okay.
Right.
So
that's
like when I was when I was watching Empire Strikes Back, I was thinking about here's this galaxy-wide battle between good and evil, between the rebels and the Empire, and it's all made very, very personal with Luke's coming of age, with his embracing of the Force, embracing his destiny, and then the whole personal battle, you know, father and son. I mean, that just changed the game for not just Star Wars, but surprises in movies right. in general.
Big, and I biggest felt like, spoiler of all time.
Of yeah. all time. Yeah. Can you imagine
it's like
if
the
Empire,
first spoiler.
Yeah.
Can you imagine if Empire was made today? Would that secret have stayed?
No, no way. No. But granted, to be fair, my mom actually ruined Empire Strikes Back to a high school friend back in the day. So it was like Homer Simpson coming out of the theater. Yeah. I can't believe Darth Vader.
But what is Star Wars? You know, I know. You know, we're all Star Wars fans. Maybe for the same reason. Maybe for different reasons.
Yeah.
But as Star Wars grows and evolves, it does need to take chances.
Yeah, of course.
And in order to take chances, it's going to have to do something different. And the fans are going to have to be okay with it doing something different that may not feel like Star Wars. So watching Mandalorian last night, I felt like, okay, it definitely – some of them – the fan service is definitely there. Let's
yes,
face
sure.
it.
Definitely.
But it did feel different. It had a more of a Western Western feel, like, you know, this is sort of like the old West of the galaxy far, far away.
Right.
But the mysticism, the force of it, the personal aspect of it,
right.
Where you're just it's all about something very just very simple. On
right.
a grand scale, that wasn't there.
Also, there's not really an underdog element. Like Rogue One has that. Even
they're all
so
underdogs.
They're all underdogs who have to overcome something bigger than themselves. And yes. I think that's why Mandalorian. I don't know if this is a marketing strategy, but I think that's why the first episode and the second episode are being released in 1 week.
Right.
Yeah. I feel like the first episode is probably establishing the tone, the world, the vibe, the aesthetic, and everything. And, you know, we can't spoil it, but the way it ends
oh my God.
Clearly segues into something that's going to be a lot more emotional. The only thing I'll spoil is that my reaction towards the end was, aww.
Final shot. I had arms in the air and just pumping my fists. But on those points, I think it's you're right on the money. And in a lot of things, I think Star Wars is always about balance, right? It's always good versus evil. How do you – like Kylo Ren for me is one of the most fascinating characters of the new sequel trilogy because he's being pulled to the light, yet he's – but he himself is wanting to be the darkness and Rey maybe is pulling him. So there's that balance. And I feel like
– that's the most interesting part of the new trilogy.
Yeah, and yes. I think a lot of people agree with that. What I loved about The Mandalorian, that first episode, is just establishing the world. It was really just let's do a couple things here. Establish the world. Establish the Mandalorian himself. A guy with zero words, you know, just does his thing and he's in a galaxy of chaos. And that end that you're referring to is the first inclination of that balance.
Bingo. Right.
Yes.
Is that – because that's the first time – and again, I'm talking around the big reveal is The Mandalorian finally – God, I don't even want to see it, say it because of the implications of the spoiler. But it's the first time the Mandalorian, I think, actually has some character to him.
I'm getting
right.
the chills.
Well, I'm glad, Scott, that you brought up Star Trek because it's interesting that I grew up with both, and as a fan of both, and to me, Star Trek was always sci-fi, and Star Wars was fantasy.
Bingo.
Right. And fantasy in the sense like Mark mentioned that it's good versus evil and I think the way we relate to these movies is that do we ourselves go to the light or the dark side, right? Like when we – whatever our circumstances are in our lives, I think that's why we also are seeing all these villain movies, right? Because we're like, do we become a villain or a hero,
boom.
Right? And so that's what I loved about Star Wars. That's what I love about the mythology of Yoda talking to Luke and teaching him – it's you have this power within you. How are you going to take responsibility and how are you going to use that power?
And one thing that is so underrated from The Empire Strikes Back, and if there's anything that's underrated about that movie, and there is nothing that really truly is, it's Mark Hamill's performance
Oh, yeah.
In that film does not get the credit that it's due, because for his scenes on Dagobah, he's acting alongside a droid and Yoda.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And both of them are not obviously real.
Right.
But
how
it
dare
is,
you, Scott?
I know. Spoiler
what?
Dorito,
what? God damn it.
But think about it. It is Mark Hamill's performance that makes you believe in the humanity of both R2-D2 and
yeah.
Yoda.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it really is amazing.
Totally. Yeah. You're completely right. And exactly, as much as obviously the actor's voice, you know, like Frank Oz and Yoda, yeah. like he's amazing. You're right. You're still acting by yourself as a human. And it's kind of like nowadays when people act with green screens,
right?
That's
what I find even harder now.
Yeah, it's
like,
kind of crazy.
You don't even have animatronics to work. Like, I was looking at that Endgame behind the scenes in Infinity War.
Yeah.
And it's like Josh Brolin with this Thanos yeah. cutout on top of his head. And
yeah.
I'm like, that's what they have to work with and imagine this whole environment.
Right.
Yeah.
And how do you
yeah.
not, like, break into laughter while you're acting?
Yeah. They got to channel pure imagination. I feel like that acting gets very underrated. I think yeah. Empire, too. I think all the actors are better. Like, I like A New Hope. I do. But it was Empire when I was like, okay, this is the one
this
I love.
One.
Yes.
Yeah. That's the one I
agreed.
Love.
It locked you
yeah.
in.
And
it had some emotion to it that you couldn't – as a kid, when I first saw it, I didn't know what I was reacting to until later. You know what I mean? Because of, as you grow as an adult, like, wow, this is layered. This is something. Mm-hmm. There's something here that was pulling me when I was little and why I was feeling the way I was when I walked out of
yeah.
that theater.
And you know,
because the Force was pulling you, Mark.
The Force was.
Yeah. And I don't know what people think about this, but it might not be the most – like hyper choreographed fight, but I think the fight between Luke and Vader in Empire is the best.
It's my number one.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
That
great.
Is my number one.
The
way
there.
It's
yeah.
shot, look, mm-hmm. when he walks
oh,
in
so
to the carbonite chamber and the lights come on
yeah.
and the Force is with you, young
okay,
Skywalker,
that poster.
You're not a Jedi yeah. yet.
That I want that poster.
It's the silhouette
it's so
of them, and then as it escalates, I mean, by the end of that duel, Vader is so vicious.
Yeah.
Like, it's like it becomes a horror movie at the end of that with Vader stalking Luke. And when he comes out of the shadows and he's just wrecking shit, and Luke has to, like. Well,
which is why the end of Rogue One is awesome, because we get to see
come
some
on.
Of that.
Yes.
Well, there's a.
Oh, that's a. Wait.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, that was
there's
great.
There's a story to that fight, because yeah. you when you find the reveal of I am your father,
ugh.
Then you just see why Vader was holding back.
Oh,
why
yes.
he didn't just annihilate him. You know?
Right.
And
right.
I think I love watching stories within fights. I feel like the prequels especially got bogged down with hyper choreography.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like they were trying to rein it back in a little. Like, I think the ones in the new movies are cool and probably better, more style.
Mm-hmm.
But there's the emotional context to the fight in Empire is the best.
I completely agree.
Yeah.
This
I
is
know.
Why we invited both of you.
Yeah.
I'm glad we all agree.
Well,
on
yes,
this really worked out and we're
yes.
20 minutes
yeah.
in.
Yeah.
The
Cody
about,
doesn't even need his whiteboard right now, right, Cody?
That's correct.
Think about that lightsaber battle. And I it's the truth when I say this, that after that lightsaber battle between Luke and Vader and Empire,
mm-hmm.
you've seen one lightsaber battle, you've seen them all. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
But no other lightsaber battle. I don't care if it's between Rey and Kylo Ren. I don't care if you have like a whole bunch of Jedi getting the crap kicked out of them in the prequels.
Yes.
You know, the less said about those movies, the better. But you got it like when you're – again, so now I was 11. I'm totally dating myself, but you know,
that's
the hair
fine.
Is a dead giveaway here.
Yeah.
when I saw The Empire Strikes Back for the first time at the Chamonix Mall Premiere 2 in May of 1980. So – you know, no one knew where this movie was going, and instead of ending the film with a big battle, you begin the movie with a big battle
yeah.
on a planet with these walkers and the snow speeders, which I thought was great. Then you have the asteroid chase, and then you have Dagobah with Yoda, and then
great
you have
theme, the asteroid field, so good.
Amazing.
So great.
And then you have Bespin with Lando, and then Boba Fett. I mean, and then it ends with this. Yeah, this really, really amazing battle that keeps going. Like it gets out of the carbon freeze chamber and it moves to the rest of Cloud City. And you're absolutely right about Vader, the way he is just, you know, just really terrorizing Luke,
yeah.
but holding back
yeah.
because of the reveal,
yeah.
which when he said, I am your father. Everyone in that theater, like I remember turning around like what?
Yeah.
What? Like what did he say?
You
I'm
say
looking
man?
Around and I'm looking around.
Holy
looking at my friends,
shit.
And I'm looking
holy
around
shit.
And everybody is like yeah. holy fucking moly.
Yeah.
You have to be kidding me.
Holy shit.
Wait, is that from
That's you, baby.
Right?
Yes!
That's you. Right.
You've been a soundbite on this show for many, many months.
No way! Oh, yes. Wait, that's from when... Wait, that's from when First
The Oscars
Man.
Streaming.
Right, right.
That was Oscars this year?
This year.
Yeah, February,
yeah,
yes.
When I'm going to say, wait, was that when First Man won visual effects?
It might be.
Yeah.
I think so, because you were so happy.
I was so happy with that! Yeah. Yes!
Yeah. But one so good. It's really one of my favorite sound bites. So I guess we need a Greg sound bite now. But so
holy
I want to I want to move in. We got to talk about some news as much as I'm having so much fun celebrating all these great movies. And I will say to end Empire Strikes Back, that's that last scene where it's Luke, Leia, and the droids.
And the droids watching
And watching
fly
the Millennium
away.
Falcon is one of the most beautiful images in cinema.
No, yeah.
Irvin Kershner, man.
Irvin Kershner, you talk about it's an emotional climax, not a big, like, you know, big battle, how you talked about opening the movie. I couldn't agree
it's
with you
so
more.
Great.
It's so perfect.
Yes. So anyway, let's talk about some other movies, Mark.
Okay. Well, here's some Star Wars news. Here, no Star Wars. Okay.
Not unless we're talking about Empire again.
No. Let's move into this the Disney era Marvel now, because we have some news that Kevin Feige has talked about. What do you guys think about the fact that we're getting a She-Hulk, Moon Knight, and a Miss Marvel on Disney Plus? Right, and obviously Falcon Winter Soldier. And Loki. So you guys excited about that? Don't everybody talk at once.
Are we? No, really quick. I will say this. There's so much content that they're putting out from the Marvel Cinematic Universe that I was just like, I don't know if I care about these characters as much. I am, however, very excited to see She-Hulk.
Yeah.
I think that could be great.
Moon Knight is mine.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. Moon Knight I'm very excited about. But what Kevin Feige basically said, and I'm breaking it down here, is that it's kind of the no-brainer stuff, but he said that once we introduce Moon Knight, Miss Marvel, and She-Hulk, they will enter the MCU. So they'll probably get their own movies.
Right.
They'll probably appear in Avengers or however they're going to do it. And is this surprising at all? Are you excited about this, or are you kind of just lukewarm, as I sense Scott Mance's right now?
Here's the lukewarm reaction. The response to the lukewarm reaction
is... Can we call you lukewarm Skywalker?
Let's bring it back to The Empire Strikes Back. No. I mean, I just feel like I'm excited about Disney Plus. I really think, you know, we were talking about this off camera before we started the show. You know, and I was surfing around on Disney Plus yesterday, looking at all the incredible content that's there, all that's coming, and seeing everyone on Twitter and Facebook commenting about Disney Plus and about how they were diving in with Mandalorian and other things. Mm-hmm. I felt like, wow, this really is a game changer here, because people don't get that excited about Netflix, certainly not about any of the other streaming services. But with the MCU, while I think that with the MCU, what Kevin Feige has done with the films have absolutely been groundbreaking and a game changer. Think about it. Where else in Hollywood history, in movie-making history, did you have a 21-film series and have the movies sort of intersect with each other, with the other characters, just like they did with the comics? Yeah. Okay?
Right.
You know, he's just taken the model from the comics. You know, build and have all these great directors come in and do their own thing, like Taika Waititi with Thor Ragnarok, and then the Russo brothers, what they did with Winter Soldier and Civil War and the last two Avengers movies. And it just all culminated with Avengers Endgame. It was such a – talk about a satisfying payoff.
Yeah.
Right.
That was the crown jewel of the MCU, in my opinion.
Mm. And it's very hard to do that, and they did end it very well.
They had there could have been – so many reasons why Avengers Endgame didn't work, or it didn't live up to the promise of everything that preceded it. But it paid off in a very big way. And what Kevin Feige has done with Marvel Studios is just like what the old, you know, studio heads did back in the, you know, 20s, 30s, and 40s, you know, with the Mayer brothers and Daryl Zanuck, you know. I mean, he's that guy, but for the 21st century.
Right.
And I think it's unprecedented. But like – there's
but
like
the shows.
There's so much.
But the shows. Are you excited
but
or no?
The shows.
Nobody first got to segue into the show.
Yeah, the show. You know, like I love Daredevil. Okay.
Yeah.
Cloak and Dagger, not great. And I love Cloak and Dagger because it's the spinoff of Peter Parker, the Spectacular Spider-Man, where those characters first were introduced.
That's right.
Spectacular Spider-Man number 64, I think, is where Cloak and Dagger first appeared. Yes!
Way judges?
To go! All right. You know, Jeopardy questions. But how much is too much?
That's why I'm wondering how excited you guys really are. Because did you all grow up as big Marvel fans?
Yes.
And this is like now that you've seen all these characters in these movies, and even characters that you weren't as familiar with, right? Like whether it's Guardians of the Galaxy or whatever. Like, have you grown to really love these characters enough that you just want, similar to Star Wars, want to keep watching new characters pop up in the same universe and keep watching all these movies? Because there's like 30 of them now.
I know that Mandalorian is going to be a weekly show. But with these MCU shows, especially because Feige came out saying that it's supposed to be they're all supposed to interconnect and that it's essential viewing now to watch these new MCU shows,
right.
That I'm thinking, do they want to release those weekly? You know what I mean?
Right.
Because I think those would have more effect. I think it's smart to put these other three players after giving the shows to characters we've seen in the movies. That way we're more enticed to check out these shows, like Falcon Winter Soldier and WandaVision, all those goodies. And then getting us used to them there, and then we could see these new characters here. I'm invested. I'm interested.
Okay.
As much as I'm skeptical that that everyone's going to be on board for it, I still think that it's going to be every character in the MCU. I'm like, I don't really know Ant-Man. I don't really know Black Panther.
Right.
Then I watch it and I'm like, I love these characters.
Right.
I feel like it'll have the same thing. I think it'll have the same effect.
But do you think it's going to be more like the actual movies, or it's going to be more similar to like Marvel and Netflix?
So Netflix is gritty and grimy.
Yeah, I love it.
From
that,
but they, you know, it's
not going to happen.
Yeah,
you know,
Perlmutter was finally let go. Right, the head of Marvel Television Ike Perlmutter is gone. Kevin Feige obviously is now running everything at Marvel Comics, TV, everything. So now we have official connections to MCU through these TV series where we didn't have them with Daredevil.
Yeah.
Even though there was in like the first episode, they talked about Thor's hammer, and that's pretty much as far as
Mew
we
Mew.
Went.
Mew
Mew. And so I can understand, and I loved Daredevil and I loved Punisher, but everything else I was kind of like,
Oh man, Jessica Jones is my favorite.
I like the first season. Yeah.
So
I like them all.
So right now we do and will have that connection, but what I found fascinating, your guys' reaction to this, is that it might be tough to get excited about Marvel moving forward because of Endgame and that title.
That's true.
Yeah.
Endgame. It's like we were like, whew, how are they going to top it?
Yeah.
How are we going to get to that fever pitch of like wanting to see each movie now? Is it going to lead up to another big baddie? Like maybe they'll introduce Galactus at some point through Fantastic Four as the big baddie that we're all going to fight.
That's what I think is so fucking beautiful about Endgame, is because no matter, even if, let's just say worst case, everything like starting from Black Widow on just happens to suck, they'll always have the Infinity Saga.
Exactly.
They'll always
have
that. And I love that they were able to accomplish
that. It's similar to
that.
Like, it doesn't matter how you feel about Dark Knight Rises, because Dark Knight is great.
Yeah.
Right. We will have it.
I love Dark Knight Rises.
Well, good for you, Scott.
So do I.
Darina.
Oh, good for you.
What the fuck,
Darina?
Good for you. Oh, come on, Christian Bale.
Hey,
I got that.
Oh, well, there you go.
Scott loves the sound bites.
I'm loving the sound bites.
Cody, I hope you're collecting future sound bites.
You know, Dark Knight Rises was an underrated film.
Yes.
I thought it was I love Dark Knight. Listen,
somebody do the Bane voice. Somebody do the Bane voice.
It is
you didn't find the Dark Knight Rises. The city is yours.
Welcome to Collider Live.
I have two words for the critics.
Think about how do you follow the Dark Knight? And what Christopher Nolan did was, instead of making a movie that was solely about Batman, he made a movie that was more of an ensemble.
Yeah.
You know, it was the Batman is missing through much of the movie. He's kept prisoner.
Similar to Batman Returns, except not as great. Just saying.
Dark Knight Rises is a great film. I think it's after The Dark Knight. It's better than Batman Begins. I thought Tom Hardy.
Yeah. Some people in the comments.
All right.
I thought it was. I thought Tom Hardy was terrific as Bane. Yeah. The reveal with the Joseph Gordon-Levitt. I just thought that there was a more. It was a more ambitious film.
Yeah.
Than The Dark Knight, and it was more ambitious. And while it didn't completely pay off, it came pretty close. Yeah. I think Dark Knight Rises is a magnificent film.
I'm very happy for you.
I agree.
The city is yours.
Okay, really quick. Favorite superhero movie of all time?
Oh, let's go. You go. Great. Greg.
I would have to say, I think it is The Dark Knight.
Nice.
Honestly, I think that's the one that hits the nail on the head for me. Protagonist, antagonist.
We might have the same.
You do it.
Superman 1978.
The Quest for Peace.
No, good Lord.
Superman 4, obviously.
The original Superman is what got me into Superman, obviously, and it just holds up for me.
It does hold up. It's my second favorite. It is my second favorite.
What's your favorite?
My favorite, and I know Cody's going to love this, is 2004's Spider-Man 2.
Spider-Man
really?
2.
Okay.
And the reason
See, that's where my mind was also going. Because I rewatched that not long ago, and I'm like, this is better. I think it's better than all the other Spider-Man movies.
It definitely is. Yeah. And the thing about Spider-Man 2, which came out June 30th, 2004. And
this is why you're good at dates in the Schmodown, man.
You know,
so
it's
crazy.
The only thing I'm good at in the Schmodown is movie release dates.
Come on.
If that category wasn't there, it would be a massacre every time I was on that thing. But Spider-Man 2 just was the perfect embodiment of what made Spider-Man so great. Peter Parker's Spider-Man. If the first Spider-Man movie was like the Steve Ditko, Stan Lee Spider-Man interpretation, then Spider-Man 2 was the perfect interpretation of the Stan Lee, John Romita years. It is the perfect adaptation, really, of Amazing Spider-Man number 50, which is one of the most important comics.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And just there was just one villain. It was just Doc Ock.
So I gotta
slightly change my answer. I would say Dark Knight's my favorite comic book movie, but I think superhero movie I would have. Because literally when I was popping in my head, I was like, Spider-Man 2 or Dark Knight is one of those two.
Yeah. So
and what you're saying about superhero movie, I would say it's Spider-Man 2.
Spider-Man 2.
So you guys like Spider-Man 2 more than Spider-Man Homecoming or Spider-Verse?
Yes.
1,000%.
Yes.
Spider-Verse, though, is my favorite
is great,
Spider-Man
but,
movie.
But, you know, as far as like just being like an animated film, live action. Okay. You know, I love Spider-Verse. It's a masterpiece.
Nothing.
Well, really quick, I want to know Cody and Alex's answers in the booth. What do you got, boys?
You ready for this one?
Yep. Yeah.
Batman Begins.
Whoa! I love that. Yeah. I love Batman Begins. I think it's better than Dark Knight Rises.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Absolutely.
All right.
What about you, Alex?
Dark Knight number one, but also up there is Black Panther.
Wait, what's yours, Darina?
I mean, for the longest time,
Spider-Verse?
it's Dark Knight. Mm-hmm. As in, like, I think it's the best movie we've gotten about a superhero. And I grew up as a Batman Joker girl. Like, that's those two, other than like Magneto and
Titanium Man?
And Professor X. Those two were kind of like not Titanium Man, Calendar Man, actually. But I know those two were like, you know, it's the yin yang. It's like our everything to do with the human condition, like all of us, like fighting with what I said earlier, whether you want to be a hero or a villain, right? But as like my favorite that I think is the most fun we've ever had in a theater for me personally is Batman Returns. Shut up, Cody! I knew you were going to do that.
Why Batman Returns?
I love it so much. I don't care.
It's 1992.
Michelle Pfeiffer as Catwoman was like, yes, meow. shut up, Cody. God damn it. I hate you.
Oh my God,
I hate
Cody,
you and love you.
Cody is cracking me up.
He was ready, and I knew because he knew I was going to say that.
When I was a kid, that movie horrified me. Like when
it was scary.
I was flashing like Penguin biting that guy.
Yeah.
That was scary.
He's so gross.
But when I rewatched it, like I want to say like a year and a half ago, I loved it. It's my favorite. I like it more than the Batman with Jack Nicholson.
It's better. I don't care what people say. It's better. Yeah. It's a better movie.
Because I love Spider-Man so much. That's sort of what gives Spider-Man 2 the edge. But when it comes down to just like what is an absolutely perfect superhero comic book-based movie, I do have to agree with this Superman right here, Mr. Mark Reilly. Superman the movie from 1978. First of all, it set the standard for everything that followed, and it's still hard to top, even though the effects seem a little dated. But you have Christopher Reeve.
I was going to say, and he's amazing.
Giving two great performances. Mm-hmm. because he's great as Clark Kent and he's great as Superman.
Yeah.
Then you have Gene Hackman, who is just absolutely magnificent chewing the scenery here as Lex Luthor and just Nip Beattie as Otis. Otis Berg?
Yes. Otis Berg.
But then, wait a minute. Mark, Riley, Greg, Darina. Which score, which musical score comes even close to topping John Williams? Nothing.
I mean, Cody, it's close.
I'm just glad you didn't play Creed,
that's
man.
It is. It's close, you know.
Oh shit!
I mean,
he's reaching for Creed.
I know he is. Damn it! Yeah, I just reminded him.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Like Christopher Reeve.
I know.
Christopher Reeve is Superman. Like, okay, so remember that the brilliance of Christopher Reeve is like that he could play Clark Kent, like Lois, you know, Lois. You know, he's like this. He's so bumbling and lovable. And then, like, remember in Superman 2 when Lois is trapped under the elevator at the Eiffel Tower and it's falling, and then Superman swings under and he stops it, and she looks up in surprise, and he goes, I believe this is your floor.
Yeah.
You're just going, he's the best.
I mean, that scene you posted, I think it's the gif you posted of him.
Yeah.
Of him
I was just bringing that up.
Superman, right? Somebody, like, from Clark Kent to Superman. It's
somebody
so great.
Posted it, and I just – it's something I always remember from that movie is when he toys with telling Lois, and he takes off his glasses and just stands up. I mean, not even – and it's like you don't even know he's doing it. It just happens. He transforms into Superman. Yes. And I put it out there like look at the change that happens. That thing, it shows you how much this sticks with you, this movie, this performance, Christopher Reeve, Superman, all that. Because that thing, I started looking and I'm like, damn. I mean, I had that thing. That was like over 400 retweets, what I wrote off of the original post that had like thousands. So it's
I'm
going to
unfavorite
those.
It. I'm kidding. Yeah. I agree.
Fine. And go watch a Batman Returns.
Yeah, because it's so good. It makes me feel so much yummy.
I do like it. I've always defended it. I've always defended it with you.
Wait, Darina.
What?
Batman Returns?
Yes, I love it. I'm not sorry.
Where
I love
did you
it
see
so
it for the first time?
Here's the thing. In the theater. Like, yeah, I literally when it came out, there it is. Stupid Creed. I was like 10 or 11. When did it come out? Like 92?
92.
Yeah,
92.
So I was 10 and I saw it in the theater. And I remember specifically from reading comic books, I was like, this is a very different non-comic book movie. I understood that. I know it's not the best comic book movie, but it's my favorite movie that's based on a comic book, right? In the sense that it's such a wacky world that Tim Burton created. Are you guys not taking me seriously right now?
Absolutely. No, 100%. I hear you.
This is your show.
I will fight you guys about Batman Returns. But maybe it's because of Catwoman. I think Michelle Pfeiffer as Catwoman is one of the best performances we've gotten in any superhero movie. It doesn't matter how you feel about the movie. Her performance, she's the best Catwoman we've gotten. Yeah. Similar to whoever you deem is Christopher Reeve's Superman.
Right.
It's, whatever is your Batman.
Well,
she's
incredible. I think Danny DeVito brings a lot of pathos to that role, too.
I agree.
You, like, feel sorry for him.
Yes.
And at the same time, you're scared
and
of the
he's
guy,
an
too.
Asshole, too.
Yeah.
He's supposed to be this, like, beast, right?
Yeah.
Like, Tim Burton obviously did not care what the Penguin was in the comics, but he created a really bizarre version that, like you said, Greg, is both scary and also you can feel bad for the guy because of what happened to him, right? So
and Christopher Walken.
Yeah.
Come on.
Like, the idea of the March of the Penguins in Batman Returns is so silly.
It's so dumb.
But tonally, because Tim Burton is one of the few at that time that could pull it off, he managed to make it work in the moment of watching it, of, like, buying into it. So, yeah, I enjoy it.
All right, since we're all comic book people here, what was the first comic book you ever got? Do you remember?
Oh, that week. I mean, it was probably one of the Golden Age Batman and, like, with Robin. Like, an adventure with, I think it was actually with the Penguin.
First one that you ever got?
I think so.
Really?
Yeah. Because unless it was an Archie comic.
I do remember.
What was it?
It's when I finally first got into comics, and it was the death of Superman.
That was my first comic.
It was about 87. Yeah, because when I heard this thing, I always wanted to get into comics, but for whatever reason, I was really into just movies. Movies were my comics, everything. I would watch them constantly. And then I heard through the grapevine, like everybody, Superman's going to die. And I went, you got to be freaking kidding. Yeah. Give me this right now. And I remember being on a family trip with my neighbors going to Mammoth. And I had all those
comics, and I was just devouring them.
Right.
And that's how it really got me into it.
Really quick, Cody, can we open up the phone lines really quick? Because I would love to hear people's thoughts on the, on our very, very extremely nerdy conversation.
Yeah.
That's what this is all about.
Yes.
That's
like, this is some good
every
sweat.
Every time I tune into Collider, you guys are talking about, like, nothing related to nerd stuff. And I'm like, this whole conversation has been nothing but like nerd culture.
Yeah, yeah. It's 2.0.
But
I mean,
this
I
is why you
wanted
to come, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, but I got to interview who wrote Does This Remember This? It's Dan Juergens, right?
Juergens, yeah. I believe so. Yeah.
Yeah. So I got to interview him for a Google talk, and it was just really cool to hear him talk about that. Comic book coming out, right? And people being really, really surprised, like shocked, and everyone wanting to go buy it because of that. And it's weird that now it's like, oh, like Infinity War, they'll come back.
Right. And I think even in comic books back then, you knew Superman would ultimately come back. But I love the way they did it, which ultimately led to my disappointment in Justice League, is that they glanced over some great source material to go into. And I know you have the Justice League, so you have to give people their credit and other superheroes there. But the different Supermen that show up, you know, the Cyborg Superman, the Eradicator, Superboy, Man of Steel.
Bizarro.
Mm-hmm. Bizarro. That all these different things, and then how Superman comes back and how he's still a little bit weak and he has the long hair. And it's like you're like, ooh, this is really
There were so many
really
great
cool.
moments of comics in the 80s. You know, you had the death of Superman. You had Watchmen. You had the Dark Knight Returns.
Right.
My seminal moment in
Which
comics.
Is my favorite comic book, I think, is Dark
amazing.
Knight Returns.
But, you know, first comic book I ever got was Amazing Spider-Man number 90. I was a little kid. It was the story by Stan Lee, the art by Gil Kane and John Romita Sr., and it's the death of Captain Stacy at the hands of Doc Ock.
Ooh,
but I remember in the early 80s, 1984, January of 1984, when the first issue of Amazing Spider-Man came out with Spider-Man's black costume. Mm. It's Amazing Spider-Man number 252. And that was a big deal.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And everybody hated the black costume. So they went back to the red and blue. And then.
So people have always hated on things
but
the
then,
whole time?
Wait a minute. But then, Dorina, suddenly everyone started to love the black costume.
Of course.
And of course, David Michelinie and Todd McFarlane picked up on that and they created Venom.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That was awesome.
And then I loved in the Civil War run years and years later, like a few years back, after Spidey kind of. Threw his identity out there and then switched sides from Tony Stark to Captain America, he put on the black suit again to kind of show his attitude. You know, it's like, no, I'm a little bit darker now because
like
of everything.
Costume.
I love
Greg,
the black
Greg, did
costume.
You say your favorite or your first comic book that you ever got?
It's kind of my brother had a lot of comics and I would just kind of read a lot of Batman growing up.
Uh-huh.
And then, like, I remember Death of Superman being one of the first an issue that I really devoured. And I don't remember what the Batman was that I read that was like – It was like a technological armor, and I was like obsessed with that. But my aunt.
I wonder if it's Nightfall when he breaks his back.
Yeah. I think that was it.
I can't remember the guy's name, Shen.
But my aunt, like on my Filipino side, my aunt from the Philippines, like the most antisocial person in the world. But, and she was like, she got like number 3 in terms of thousands of students in her high school, like smartest people there. But she was obsessed with comics. So when I was like 10 or something, she like handed me down a whole bunch of comic books. So every comic I have a lot of comics and it's all from her.
That's
awesome. She got me really when I started becoming obsessed, it was 2 comics. And it was Batman Year One and Nightwing the Hunt. Batman Year One. I've always thought it would be cool to do like a mid-budget movie based off Batman Year One.
Yeah.
And I would cut out all the stuff where you have like the Bruce Wayne perspective. Like I would treat it as if the audience didn't know Bruce Wayne and Batman were the same person. But you have Bruce Wayne and Batman in there, but you keep it Commissioner Gordon based, so you have kind of a Serpico vibe there. And I think that would be a really cool one.
I love that.
And Nightwing, the Hunt for Oracle, that was one that really clicked for me.
But you guys are actually remembering.
We don't know
we don't know.
Long Halloween.
You guys are bringing up like the specific issues. So I don't remember what that Batman was, but the first big issue that I remember getting was Dark Phoenix. I love that storyline so much. Let's not talk about the movie yet. But hopefully it'll get redone at some point. But anyways, Cody, do we have any phone calls?
All right.
Oh, you are on Collider Live. How are you? Who are you?
I'm doing good. This is Shane from Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, Canada.
Hey, all right. Shane. Welcome to Collider Live.
Hello, Shane.
You got Greg and Scott with us. What do you got for us?
Well, first, before the question, I just want to say that when I heard that Christian was leaving Collider, I got worried because I didn't know what was going on. But yeah, as soon as I heard that Roxy and Udrina were taking over, I was like, oh, this is going to be great. No worries.
Christian, that's so sweet.
Christian left Collider long.
Yeah, Christian left Collider. Yes, he did.
You didn't know that?
I thought he was just, and I hear it is.
Spoiler alert.
And two women took over? Oh, my God. What the hell is going on?
Are you leaving now?
Oh, my God. This culture we live in.
Yeah, that'll do it. So here we are.
Welcome to Collider. Well, kidding. So what you got for us today?
Well, sorry. I don't mind going back to Star Wars talk.
Yeah, do it. Let's go back to Star Wars.
In relation to the trailer, that one scene where I've heard a bunch of people mention like the Star Destroyer coming out of the ocean. I don't think it was an ocean. It looked more like
ice,
like ground to me.
Yeah, but it was like buried under
anyway,
the ice.
I don't know if you've ever read the Wraith Squadron line of books from Legends. But anyway, they're kind of like Rogue Squadron turns into like Wraith Squadron, which is kind of like a Special Forces version of it. But anyway, there's a part in the story where the Emperor had built a super Star Destroyer under the city in Coruscant. It was kind of like a backup plan that it came out of the ground in the book. And that seeing that scene in the trailer really brought that to my memory. And so I have a theory that that might be where like the Emperor's storyline comes, that he had a hidden base of a Star Destroyer under the ground.
Well, if that's true,
coming up and what,
if that's true, Shane, how does the Emperor's empire connect with the New Order?
The First Order.
The First Order.
Yeah.
First Order.
Well, it could be that they like found, like somehow took over the remnants of the Empire that turned into the First Order, had that and brought it about or something. Yeah. Anyway, that's just something that really brought to my memory from reading the books that that could be how the Emperor gets reconnected.
Yeah.
Wow. That's awesome. I love that. Really cool. Thank you for your call.
Fernandez and I all talk about it all the time on Rule of Two that, you know, there's a lot of they're going to have to cover a lot of ground in this next movie, right? Because we really don't know how the First Order came. I mean, other than rose from the ashes, that was in the crawl of Force Awakens. So you go, okay. But I would like to know the ruling class and the Senate and the, like how that all came into it. And the Emperor, I think if we look at a lot of different source material – not source material but like the comics and the Aftermath books is that the Emperor always had a contingency plan in all these books. In Battlefront 2, you kind of see it put into front, put into motion, like, you know, go to the Outer Rim or go to the unknown regions and you know, go up there and get together and figure it out from there. And that's how I think the First Order kind of rises. But
it's interesting.
It's a lot. It's going to be a lot to figure out. Yeah. And how the Emperor comes back is the biggest question for me.
Mm. Yeah, it's interesting that I'm sure that will make everyone happy.
Oh, yeah. Everybody will get in. You know, they're going to be loving this no matter what.
Of course. Yeah. No, it's interesting because going back to our conversation earlier about, you know, as this universe expands, how people – we have to get used to the fact that there's different types of Star Wars content now, right? And some of the Star Wars content we get is focusing on the Force mythology, but some of it actually is focusing on the political aspects of it, right? So you can – we have so much that you can pick and choose. You don't have to watch it all, but watch what you like.
Yeah.
That's what I
think. Like The Mandalorian.
Exactly.
Yeah. Like, like the original trilogy, The Mandalorian, Rogue One. Yeah, weren't there like three movies that came out between 99 and 2005?
Revenge of the Sith.
Revenge of the what?
Sith.
The last 20 minutes?
I mean, I like Revenge of
Revenge of the Sith.
Yeah.
Good for you.
That's all.
Yeah.
That's all.
Happy
the
for
last
you.
20 minutes
you know what?
Of
I'm
Revenge of
out.
The Sith came out. And
the last 20 minutes of Revenge of the Sith came out in 2005.
Yeah.
And that was pretty good.
Cody, we got another call?
No, right.
You're on Collider Live. Collider Live. How are you? Who are you?
I'm Travis from Dallas.
Hey, Travis.
Hello, Travis. You got Scott Mance and Greg Alba with
Travis.
Us.
Oh, yeah. I've actually called him before. This is like my second time.
Nice.
It's great. And by the way, on behalf of all Star Wars fandom, I would just like to say McClunky.
Good,
hashtag
good one.
That, baby.
I laughed my fucking ass off yesterday. I should be, as a Star Wars fan, I should be pissed about this.
Same. I agree.
But weirdly enough, I every time I heard it and every time I saw like people tweeting about it, I would laugh uncontrollably over this whole thing.
What
did
I miss?
And George Lucas did this edit like what, 7 years ago?
My favorite tweet from all of this is Drew McWeeny,
right,
who is so smart and so well-spoken. Yeah. He's like, my favorite thing about this, Scott, to answer your question, Lucas changed the Han shoots Greedo scene again.
You mean George,
again.
Not Luke.
So what is it now?
Who did I say? Yeah, Luke. George.
So Lucas. What is it now?
So now the same similar things, they all shoot at the same time, but
– Well, Han shot only in the original and now,
right, now
they both shoot.
They shoot at the same time. But from what I understand – and I haven't seen it yet because I'm just laughing from afar.
Right.
And that's – Greedo says McClunky.
And
he
then
says
he
something
dies.
Along the lines of McClunky. And then
– what does that mean?
We don't know yet.
Travis, do you know what it means?
I have the slightest damn clue.
Yeah.
I really – it's one of those weird things that Lucas does that I'm – you know, that he typically does every once in a while, you know, whenever these things are re-released, I suppose.
Do you think he's trolling all of us?
I think it's
This is what McWeeny said, is that he loves that he put this in here as a landmine for Disney,
mm-hmm,
is that nobody knew what was happening. It was almost like he woke up one night and was drinking some hot chocolate and then, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to fuck around with this again. And he just sits down and he adds it in and then he puts it in, you know, in the special edition again, and then he signs the paperwork and Disney puts it out there on Disney Plus because everybody was talking about it yesterday.
Can you say McClunky in George Lucas' voice?
McClunky.
Are you sure he's not saying McCartney? Maybe he was a Beatles fan?
Maybe it was.
You know? Thank you so much for the call, Travis.
Thank you, Travis.
Paul is dead.
Paul is dead.
So
turn me on, dead man.
Let's go to break, and we will open up the phone lines again, guys. But thank you so much, Scott and Greg, for being here. We will be back. Take a bathroom break. Go drink some water. See you guys soon.
Good song.
Hey guys, it's Perry here to let you know that Movie Talk is moving. We've had a great time in this 3 p.m. Pacific slot, but guess what? We want you to start your day with Collider Movie Talk, so we're moving. 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern. It's going to be a lot of fun. You're going to get a longer show with some brand new segments. So tune in starting Monday, September 16th, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Oh,
see you there.
Pick it up there, Alex.
Hey, everyone. John Rocha here, the host of Collider Sports Time. Well, you know, if you've been watching us every week, you know, we break down the latest and the greatest in the world of sports, talk about the big issues,
break it down.
Big games, all of it, the rotating band of guests like Matt Nose and Josh Kuga. We've had Taylor Brashadi on. We've had so many great guests. Now, if you want to see more of Sports Time or you want to try it out for the first time, remember to subscribe to Collider Sports YouTube channel for all the sports goodness.
Hey guys, it's Riley here. Let me tell you Riley Roundtable. You know it, right? It drops every Thursday on Collider Conversation, and I have guests from all across the space. John Rocha, Gray Drake, Alexander Desplat came on at one point. We talk everything from movies, we talk about life, and everything in between. What do you want to hear? What do you want to talk about? It's the Riley Roundtable every Thursday on Collider Conversations. You get it there.
Hi, I'm Koi Jandro, host of Collider Heroes, and I'm here to tell you we've got 20-minute episodes coming at you on Collider Video, on the YouTube, as you've always loved it. Plus, now we've got hour-long podcasts dropping every Thursday, so make sure to subscribe to the podcast because it's going to get even more sweaty on the podcast. Plus, every week we're going to try to get some very special guest interviews, all of the people that help shape these movies and TV shows you love. So, video, podcast, interviews all coming at you. Be sure to subscribe. Thanks so much, guys. Stay sweaty.
What's up, Collider fans? Ryan Satin here from ProWrestlingSheet.com, where you can find the top stories throughout the week in the world of professional wrestling. If you're a wrestling fan like myself, then you'd be doing yourself a disservice by not checking out all the shows we do every week on YouTube.com/C/WrestlingSheet. In particular, on Wednesdays, we've got a SmackDown recap show hosted by John Rocha and myself, where we pick apart and talk about every little thing that happened on the Blue Brand. So do yourself a favor and go subscribe at youtube.com/C/WrestlingSheet.
Hey guys, Riley here, and let me tell you about Rule of Two. You looking for a Star Wars fix? Well, Rule of Two is that show. It drops on Collider Video's main YouTube channel, as well as on Podcast One's Jedi Council feed. So go over there, subscribe, share it with your friends. It's hosted by myself and Mark Fernandez. We talk everything in the Star Wars universe with a lot of deep dives and a lot of conversations that go all in. You know what to do. Subscribe, join us there, and rise.
Hey everyone, John Rocha here, the host of Collider Mailbag. New episode drops every Saturday and Sunday in your face and in your ears, answering the questions from you fans about the world of entertainment, film, and television. Me and great guests from our sphere do the best to answer your questions from Twitter, from Instagram, and of course, email as well, every Saturday and Sunday.
Hi, I'm Amy Dallin, one of the hosts of Collider Heroes, and starting right now, you can catch our show Tuesday nights with a new Collider Heroes and a longer Collider Heroes podcast, where Coy and I are going to talk your ears off. You already know that's coming. So make sure to go to YouTube, subscribe, and find us on the Collider Heroes podcast feed for all of that sweaty goodness.
The Witching Hour is all over Collider right now. You can listen to that horror-filled podcast with myself, with Haley Fouch. We talk about witchiness. We talk about slashers. We talk about space horror. You name it, all on that show on the Collider Factory feed. And on top of that, you can find an article all about Witching Hour every single Tuesday on Collider.com. Check it out. Get scared. Hopefully you survive the Witching Hour.
And we're back. We've lost someone.
We lost Scott Mann.
Are
you surprised? Scott Mann
started. Of course not. He's probably socializing out there.
He's going around as the mayor of Hollywood. Yes. That's what we call Mann sometimes.
Yes, because every time he shows up to a screening, he's saying hi to everyone. Mm-hmm. That's what I love about Scott, though. That energy. He's always so pleasant. Like, I would be exhausted.
Secret racist, though. I think everyone should know that.
What a twist. Oh my God!
I'm just gonna say whatever I want about Scott until he walks through that door.
Oh my God!
Oh my God! Your shirt is so great too.
Thank you.
Can I have your shirt and your sweatshirt?
It was like I was sweating so much. And I'm like, but I don't want to go through this whole wardrobe change.
Are you loving the new Watchmen?
I love it too.
I finally caught up last night.
We're all obsessed with it.
Yeah,
I mean, just what they're doing with that thing.
It's really, really good.
Jeremy Irons' character is in the lake. I'm like, what the fuck am I watching right now?
You know, it's the same reaction that we have with Lost. Like, yeah, every episode of Lost is like, what is happening?
What is going on?
I'm so into this, but I don't know what's happening.
I'll take all of it.
Is Anchorman one of your favorite comedies of all time? Because it's mine.
It is probably the most rewatch comedy I've ever experienced.
Same.
Like, I spent the whole summer when I was on DVD watching almost every. It's to the point now where when I watch it, I'm just like, I know all the lines. I'm sick of the movie now.
But I love Scott.
But I've seen it like too many times.
But it's so good, though. It's freaking great.
It's so great to quote.
And it's weird to. I remember seeing it in the theater in San Diego when it came out. And my friend and I were the only.
Hey, there he is.
We were just talking so many good things about you, Scott.
Were you socializing? Right. What were you doing?
Back on. just gearing up. Go big or go home, right?
Go big or go home.
Cody, can you please play that specific soundbite next time we do calls?
What? So this has been going on now. I mean, that happened in February.
Yeah.
So I had no idea.
About then. Yeah.
I had no idea.
I am shocked nobody has like tagged you on Twitter or
nothing.
Like,
yeah. Guys,
the beauty of Collider Live.
I am honored.
Yeah. That's a Christian Harloff special. You know, he specifically wanted that.
Yes.
And, you know, yes, instruct Cody or, like, am I getting that right, Cody? Or did you pull it? Or?
No, I pulled that myself.
Oh, you did. Okay, there it is.
And then, well, Cody's course, like, hello, I did.
Yeah. I can. Yeah, well, there it is.
Thank you, Cody.
But,
what an honor.
We were just talking about Anchorman because I saw his shirt because we both love it so much. But I was telling my story of when I saw it first in the theater, I was the only one with my friend that was laughing. And nobody else was laughing. It was really bizarre. And I've heard from other people that movie's grown on them, but when they first saw it, they also didn't get it. I think that
it was a similar experience in my theater, first time I saw it.
Why do you think that is? It was just ahead of its time?
It
is it a different type of comedy?
Like the humor just didn't – I don't know. It also depends on the theater. I went to like an Arclight. Right. And I think at the time, Arclight was like sophisticated.
Right. Yeah. We are going to the theater.
That's when like reserve seating
was
rare.
What was that, 2004?
You would you know tell us.
No. All of us.
Yeah. Mr. Somebody Date.
Sure. On this. I think it was 2004.
Probably.
I think you're right.
That sounds about right because I was in college in San Diego.
Right, come on. See, this is why.
Look at him. You're a freak.
Right? I am a freak. Look.
You're like our oracle.
If you're ever like wake up in the middle of the night.
2004.
July.
He just looked it up too.
I'm sure they did.
If you ever, you know, wake up in the middle of the night with a cold sweat, like you got to know when a certain movie came out and your internet is down and you're not getting cell phone service, just. Well, I guess you can't call me.
I can't call you. Send a pigeon?
Speaking of dates and classic movies, I wanted to talk about the James Dean thing because surprisingly, Scott's opinion is very different than ours, and I'm very interested to hear this.
Yeah. Well,
what the hell?
Let me update a little bit of news because I want to get all of your takes on this. So the company behind the James Dean CGI. They aim to do this, or i.e. they want to resurrect more dead celebrities. Some of the rights that they own. Burt Reynolds, Andre the Giant, Maya Angelou, Betty Page, Lou Gehrig. There it is. Christopher Reeve. They're talking about Christopher Reeve. I mean, they have – obviously they're in cahoots with their estates.
Right.
So the estate is basically saying
yes, here you go. We want more money.
And maybe it's from there – and I'm trying to play devil's advocate now, getting on the other side, being the family, resurrecting their loved one to continue to shine, to continue to make a presence known in the film world. But to me, that's just
– Well, before we get Scott's interesting opinion. Greg, do you hate it too?
No, I think that Godfather 2 with De Niro was terrible, and they should have just put Marlon Brando in there instead.
That is probably the best argument you could possibly make for this.
I'm surprised you're on board.
This is great.
There's context. There's wiggle room. Like, I think if – like the Fast and Furious 7 movie, that's a different kind of context. They filmed most of it. And then they needed to fill in some Paul Walker moments. This doesn't make any sense to me because you're not resurrecting James Dean to be James Dean in the movie. You're resurrecting a person to impersonate James Dean – playing a character.
Yes. Right.
Like, that doesn't make any sense to me. And I think it is kind of – I think it's pretty insulting, to be honest. I think every bit of context matters. Like with Rogue One, he already played him.
It was a very expensive Easter egg and the family did sign off on it.
I don't think it's a real performance. It's a person trying to do what another – and everyone who does acting knows that the thing you have to do is what you would do, not what – this person would do as this character.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, Scott.
No, I want to hear your take on this, Darina.
Here's the thing. I've been thinking about it the last week or so that we've been discussing this. At first, I was very against it. I'm still against it, but I think that it's hard to say I would never change my mind because we don't know what's going to happen with technology and, in general, how we all get stimulated by technology. Like for whatever in the next 5 years, technology is going to change a lot. So maybe we're all going to be purchasing holograms of James Dean to hang out in our house, right? That's the thing. Like it's interesting to think about how we're all going to not just watch entertainment, but purchase entertainment, right?
Yeah.
That's going to change as well. And we were talking about Blade Runner earlier. In Blade Runner 2049, Joy, that character, right, where she's the sort of new Rachel, but she's a hologram version of that, right?
That like that was amazing.
It really was. And so I don't know how we're going to be bringing up Her by Spike Jones, right? Like, how are we going to be interacting with AI in the future? Mm. So this kind of makes me think, is that going to make things more acceptable to bring back these dead celebrities? I don't know.
So just to clarify, being on board just means that I'm intrigued. I'm not dead set against it.
Yeah.
But it just depends on the context. You're not going to have James Dean in every scene of a movie.
It's a secondary lead.
He's going to be the second lead.
But I think, first of all, you know, he made three movies, okay?
Right.
You know, And this is no matter how much technology advances, this is still going to be a pretty expensive process. Mm-hmm. So it's not something that is going to become the norm. At least I don't think it is.
But when the technology does advance enough to where – yeah.
Okay, hang on. So back in 2001, there was a movie that came out called Final Fantasy: The Spirits Within. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, it was kind of an early sort of CGI character movie, and everybody thought that's it. They're never going to use actors again. And that didn't happen. And even as the technology for motion capture, performance capture with Lord of the Rings, and even Rogue One with Peter Cushing, and now Gemini Man with the all CGI version of the young Will Smith, which I thought was like looked like the real thing,
Or the Irishman.
The Irishman was de-aging.
Yeah,
it was de-aging. But what they did with the young Will Smith, creating an all CGI version of young Will Smith in Gemini Man, a movie which I thought was okay. I didn't hate it. It was fun. I thought it was like, holy moly, that really looked amazing. And when I was watching Rogue One and I was watching Gemini Man, I thought to myself, just going to geek out here for a minute. What if the technology was so great where – just go with me. You know, if we're going to nerd out here, this is the time and the place to do it. What if the technology actually became so convincing where you could create an all CGI version? Okay, just go with me here.
Okay.
All right. Are you ready? Mm-hmm. I'm just going to say this.
We're waiting.
You could create all CGI versions of the original cast of Star Trek and do an episode that really felt like a vintage episode of the original series. Now, half of those actors – just go with me, Cody. Just go with me.
Oh, I think he is.
All right. I mean, listen, my love for Star Trek is not absolute. I love the original Next Gen, DS9.
Voyager?
I love the – Voyager's okay. Mm-hmm. Enterprise was boring. I'm still
–
I mean, I'm growing – Discovery. We'll talk about that. Okay. I'm getting there. The show is getting there.
Okay. Better theme song than
but I love
Enterprise.
I love the Kelvin timeline movies. I love the JJ movies. But like, you know, the original series is still the gold standard for me. Mm-hmm. And even though half the cast members are no longer with us, you know, the other half is really, really up there. But if you were able to use the technology in a way to create an episode of the original series with the cast members the way they looked in the 60s and make it a brand new episode and use actors that were delivering believable performances of young Shatner, of young Leonard Nimoy, I would love that. I mean, I'm totally geeking out on here. But it's not something that's going to be done all the time where actors are going to be threatened.
I have a question though, because let's say bringing up your point about, okay, let's say that this happened, that somebody made a Star Trek episode of the original series. Is that the same thing as someone animating it? Like, would you guys equate animation, right? Like, let's say they're animating Leonard Nimoy, like Spock, Chekhov. Like, let's say that's because we have seen a Star Trek cartoon series, right?
Yeah.
So is that the same?
Episodes.
So would you guys equate that to putting a new CG Spock and Shatner?
Well, there was some talk. I think it was just basically wishful thinking that they might, you know, with today's technology, actually go back to those 22 episodes from the animated series that ran between 73 and 75 and actually won a daytime Emmy for Best Children's Program back in the day and, you know, create all CGI versions of the original cast members, but then just play it out. You have the audio, you have the music, and just sort of play it out that way. And I don't think you should do that. The original series has its merits, and some of those episodes would have made great live-action episodes. But just – To have something all new as maybe in time for the 75th anniversary of the original series, I think that would be really cool.
So it's like a kind of a cool what if that you get to experience as a fan.
What if you got to see one more episode, a lost episode of the original series?
Right.
But back in 1996 when you had the Trials and Tribulations crossover episode where the DS9 crew goes back to Space Station K7 and they're interacting sort of in the background. That was 96 and that was brilliant the way they put the DS9 characters in an episode of the original series. So, you know, you're already sort of messing with it a little bit, but it, not to the point where it became the norm. Yeah. And I think that this concept of having James Dean as a secondary character in a film, it's fun. It sounds fun. I don't think there's any reason for people to get caught up in arms about it.
I don't know if it sounds fun to me. See, but I think it's what you said. It depends on the context, right?
Yeah, the context. Yeah. But for this next report, it's like they're doubling down, and it's not just a one-off. It's that they want to look at other celebrities and do it, and that's where I have real issue.
Like Betty Page, like she's an icon, right? She's something legendary to that world and not just to Hollywood in general. Like, what are they going to do? They're just going to make another hologram of her dancing? I don't know how I feel about that.
It depends on the first of all, you used a hologram of Elvis Presley in Blade Runner 2049.
Yes. Right.
Okay, and that was effective for that particular scene.
Sure.
So again, it just depends on the circumstance. It depends on the context. You know, you're not going to see Fast and Furious 10 starring Vin Diesel and James Dean.
But
I don't think.
What is this is a brand new character though, right?
Right.
That whoever is impersonating James Dean
exactly
will have to play this character. Like, it to me, it's such a different thing when it's already you're talking like that context of Star Trek is completely different than applied to this context.
Yes. I understand that
this kind of context could go to an actor like there's millions of actors who could probably pull this role off.
That was my original point.
And with that one, you already have so much to go off of. Like, okay, this is how Kirk behaves. This is how Spock. This is how all the crew behaves. So we can get actors who are nailing that impression down. It's a completely different thing to get James Dean. It just will not be an authentic performance. It won't be a real performance.
Because to your point about Robert De Niro.
Exactly.
In Godfather. Mm-hmm. That's what it got for me. I said, because they in the original quote said, we searched far and wide for somebody and decided that James Dean was the best fit for them. And I'm like, you just – like all these actors just lost out to a dead guy.
Yeah. And what is the actual beginning credits going to say? Is it going to say starring James Dean? Starring
James Dean and this other
actor? I mean, because it's not James Dean.
I see all of your points, and I really do agree with your points. But I also think that this is just something that is such a long way from it ever posing a threat to real hungry working actors and actresses, and I just don't think it's such a long way from it ever being an issue, and I don't think it ever will be an issue
that you know of.
I just my spider sense is tingling, Cody. That's for you. I just don't see it happening.
Okay.
Cody and Alex, how do you guys feel about this? I want to know. Do you like this or no? Especially because, Alex, you're younger.
I'm over it, but Alex has a hot take.
Well, not necessarily a hot take. It's just that.
Well, fine then. All right. Back to you. No, just
I was just like, you could have, like for The Irishman, which I saw the other week, like they could have, instead of using that technology to de-age, they could have hired other actors to play the young De Niro so that the physicality is a little bit better.
Sure.
And also, same thing for I think I love technology and the use of it, like Alita, Irishman, Gemini Man. They're all great uses of it. But I'm just scared that that celebrities, the same as Riley, will be resurrected that way.
Yeah.
I
also think really quick, I think specifically James Dean upsets me because – the idea of his three films and part of him dying so early is what made his legacy so long lasting.
Sure.
Agreed.
Is because we lost him so early. Mm-hmm. And then to pitch this as we're finally getting a fourth James Dean performance, I think is like there's other actors where I wouldn't be as bothered by it because they already have a well-established filmography.
Similar to Peter Cushing, right?
Like yeah, exactly.
Because he was older. And it still bothered me in the sense that I still felt like I was looking at like cartoon or video game man.
I thought it was really cool.
It really bothers me that it's a new character. It's less bothersome when it's a character they're bringing back to life.
I think the word you used was perfect is that it's a new James Dean performance, which it's not because it's not James Dean because he's dead.
Yeah. Something that Alex just said just now about The Irishman, about why not just use younger actors for De Niro and Pesci and actually I was interviewing the producers of that movie, Jane Rosenthal and Emma Tillinger Koskoff, who also produced Joker, by the way.
Hey.
$1 billion. $1 billion worldwide.
So happy about
speak.
That.
And I said to her,
a billion?
Yeah,
it's about to. I know it's close to.
Did you like it, Greg?
Loved it.
Okay, I think good.
By the we time argued about it on movie fights. Yeah.
We did. Oh, we did.
By the time we're done here with today's Collider Live, it should actually be passing $1 billion.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I'm serious.
I'm sure.
So, wow. So I had asked them.
Wow. That's my brain fart. I forgot we were on movie fights fighting about Joker.
Was it always the plan to DH? Why not just use young actors? And she said it was always the plan to try to make the de-aging work effectively to make the movie, because when you have the same actor playing a character over the course of 5 decades, you're going to be more emotionally vested to it than if you have younger actors and then transition to the older actors. It'll still work and it would still be a great movie, but there's something about the emotional impact of it, the commitment to the character when you're seeing one actor play the person over the course of all that time.
Well, yeah. Good point. De-aging is very different, though, than new face.
Than a completely different human playing a different human. Yes.
You know, just go back to my Star Trek thing. You know, the thought of like seeing it's a lost episode, you know, and you make it look just like the original series.
Yeah.
I mean, I
actually don't hate that. That's the first time somebody's brought up to me that if somebody CG'd a person that's dead, if it's in the context of a character and you're just using somebody's voice, you know, similar to animation, that might not bother me as much.
Well, your point is just what they did for Tarkin in Rogue One.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's exactly what
it is. Even Gemini Man, only really worked when there was like no lighting in them, when it was just so dark in Gemini Man.
I thought it was good.
And one of the biggest complaints I've heard with that movie, and I felt it, was in the end of that movie when they're in the daylight and you just see the young – you guys all saw Gemini Man?
No.
I didn't
see
it.
Yes, I did.
Well, in the daylight when on the campus, like everyone started laughing at the screen. I was at a press screening. Everyone started laughing at it because it just looked so unreal.
Right.
And you need to have this ridiculous dark lighting and shading in order to make it look believable. And I noticed as I saw The Irishman just a few days ago, and I loved it. It's weird how Endgame and The Irishman are my favorite movies of the year, considering all the commentary going around.
Right.
But even in The Irishman, I noticed they had to do a lot of dark lighting to hide a lot of things. And there were times in the de-aging with De Niro specifically. Pacino and Pesci I thought was flawless, but De Niro at times actually looked a little artificial.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that. It did take an adjustment to accept the younger
De Niro. That's interesting because I've heard of other friends that have seen that movie. And then also you guys saw It Chapter 2?
Yeah.
Because they de-aged the younger
kids.
Cast as well. And that I was distracted by the entire time. But other people didn't even know that they were de-aged. They didn't even notice. With the glasses,
his head
right?
Look weird.
Yeah. No. It's very jarring to me, but other people don't even notice.
Why did they do that with the It Chapter 2 kids?
Because the kids got older and they wanted to do flashbacks.
Because when kids grow, it's really noticeable.
Yeah, because they were growing.
Because teenagers grow way faster than us.
The guy the one that everybody loves,
Finn Wolfhard.
He actually grew up mighty fast since Stranger Things.
Yeah, so that's
the first
it's even distracting in the show.
Exactly.
Like how much older he looks.
I know, he really had a growth spurt.
Thank you for the very civil discussion where we disagree, you guys.
Well, I've been blasting them on Twitter. Oh, okay. So,
you just block them.
Block, double block.
Cody, can we open up those phone lines, please?
No. I was kidding. Are you kidding me? Please.
I'm going to go to their house right now.
I'm not even looking at that. And I'll tell you this. If anybody was trolling on my friend Scott Mann's, they would be blocked. Go fuck yourself, block.
And feel free to interrupt us with that lovely Scott Mann soundbite when somebody calls us, please. What I want to ask, you just said Irishman and Endgame were your favorite movies of the year. What about you, Scott?
My favorite movies of the year?
Yeah.
Not in order, but my top three. Marriage Story.
I'm dying to see this.
It's a great, great film.
Yeah.
The Farewell.
Yes, that's really great.
And Parasite.
Yes.
Oh, God,
that's my top 10.
What do you love about that movie so much?
Okay, so not only because I'm very much into the way the world is right now, and it's a movie about classism and similar to Joker, you know, and those topics are very relevant right now. And it was so genius what Bong Joon-ho did. Mm-hmm. But where you actually empathize with all the families.
Yep.
Like there's every single one. Like exactly. Whether you're rich or poor, they each have problems. And also they're all doing bad things as well, right? Like all of these characters are very gray.
Yeah.
And the movie tonally shifts from comedy to tragedy to horror. It was just done so brilliantly. Mm-hmm. I hadn't seen a movie like that in a while. And I was like, maybe it's overhyped. And I sat there and I was like, nope, this is great. It was underhyped.
It is brilliant. It is a masterpiece. Also, just honorable mention to Jojo Rabbit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Everyone keeps,
I need to see that. I know there's so many I need to see. It's really good.
It's really, really good. And I got to tell you, the more I think about JoJo, I think it's moving up for me, you know, just to plug Collider FYC for your consideration.
Oh, please do. Please do, because you have a new series, FYC is coming through Arclight now.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, so just a sort of tangent off this. So
please.
For everyone who would watch the first season of Colliders, for your consideration, season one with me and Perry Nemiroff, the amazing Perry Nemiroff and the mighty Jeff Snyder.
Yeah.
Thank you to everyone who watched that show and gave us so much love and support. So we just started doing our second season, but the added boost here, and it just makes perfect sense, is that we're also doing a Collider FYC screening series with our friends at ArcLight, which have been so great to Collider already with all the screenings that have been going on with the Steve Weintraub and everybody.
Yeah, makes sense.
And it makes perfect sense. And we were talking about Best Picture last week, and I definitely sang the praises of Parasite. I think it will win Best Foreign Film for sure.
At least,
but
I hope.
I think it should win Best Picture.
Agreed.
Period.
Completely agree.
But I think that because it does have the Best Foreign Film thing like in the bag, I feel like they might give it to a different film. Will it go to The Irishman? Will it go to The Farewell? Would it go to
Jojo Rabbit?
I wouldn't be mad if it went to Jojo Rabbit because that movie should be watched by everyone.
I agree. Mm-hmm.
That's a movie that it teaches you that from a young age we're taught to fear and hate.
Yeah.
And there's no reason for that. And it's just a beautiful message. And it's funny.
Yep.
It's very smart.
I agree.
It's beautiful. Performances. It's just a brilliant movie.
And the
music. Oh, looks like we got a call there.
We're back.
You are on Collider Live. Who are you? How are you?
Hello, this is Nathan from Logan's Four, Indiana.
Hey, Nathan.
Oh, I owe him money.
You're on with
sorry,
how much does Greg owe you?
Exactly.
God, he tracked me down.
What'd you got for us today?
He's like, shit.
I have a Star Wars question for all you guys.
All right.
Shocker.
And Cody and Alex can join in on this conversation, too.
Okay.
Because they love talking about Star Wars.
Yep. if you guys had to build a lightsaber, what would your lightsaber would be and what would your color would be?
And what would our color be? Okay, cool. Thank you for the question, Nathan. Do you guys have any answers?
I mean, I'm always a fan of the original Luke Skywalker lightsaber from New Hope that was Anakin's, that was given to him by Obi-Wan. I love
like
the
blue?
Design, and it's blue. Yep, all of that. I would probably make mine around the same kind of an inspiration. Blue all the way.
Okay, what about you?
Definitely Darth Vader's.
Darth Vader's, okay.
Easily. Red. I got to go with red.
I think because of the age I was at, the Darth Maul lightsaber had always stood out to me.
You got to do some martial arts with that.
Though. Yeah, I do have more. I did 10 years of martial arts. I can work with a bow.
What did you do?
Are you kidding me?
I did Taekwondo and got a black bow when I was like 11.
Wow. That's awesome.
Dude,
you know what? That does not surprise me.
That's so
I feel like if somebody tries to jump us, I hope I'm with Greg so that he can just be like, you know, no, son of a bitch.
Yeah. Quick question. Did you ever watch Miami Connection?
No.
Okay, because it's my favorite bad movie ever.
Oh, okay.
I highly recommend. But it's basically a Taekwondo. It's like a martial arts like shitty movie. But that gang or whatever, that group actually has also a sort of Hall and Oates band. And they sing a song called Against the Ninja. And they go, Taekwondo, Taekwondo. And so reminded me of
that. I got to watch. What's it called?
Miami Connection.
Movie. Favorite bad movie. That's a great. What's your favorite bad movie?
Favorite bad movie.
You see, the thing is with this movie, it's considered terrible. The main actor has completely denounced it over and over again. And for some reason, I watch it and I go, I don't know what it is. I like it.
Spider-Man 3.
Wild Wild West.
This
is inventive. And they're funny. Their chemistry's great.
I do love Kevin Kline, but.
I think they're both funny together.
What about you, mister?
I would probably go with Jaws 2.
Okay.
It's not great. It's not like you can never – it's like they get – what I love about Jaws 2, 3, and 4 is that they try to recreate Jaws. I mean that, to capture that lightning in a bottle again. They can't do it. Jaws 2 is fun.
Jaws 2
is
fun.
It's a horror movie because it's like the shark is literally picking off teenagers.
Mm-hmm. It's terrifying. It's someone who was terrified of the first Jaws, and that movie forever terrified me of sharks.
Yeah.
Jaws 2 is also terrifying. So good pick, Mark.
Yeah. You know,
what about you, Scott?
I was going to go old school and pick out something that was kind of obscure. The movie Capricorn 1.
Oh, yeah.
With James Brolin and Sam Waterston, Hal Holbrook and O.J. Simpson.
Some people like that movie.
I don't know if they do or they don't, but first of all, it's a great movie. Mm-hmm. It's very much a product of the Watergate era. It's a movie that's ripe for a remake, and it still holds up. But in terms of more modern movies, my favorite movie that everyone hates is Spider-Man 3.
Mm. Do you love it?
I love Spider-Man 3.
I've never found somebody. Do you guys know anybody that likes it? That's kind of great.
I think there's a lot to appreciate.
Yeah.
I don't love it, but there's good dancing amount that you could take it.
There's a good
I will say, I always kind of liked that scene because it's just like
– it's goofy.
Sure.
It's goofy.
Yeah, it's goofy. It kind of makes sense in the story Raimi's trying to tell. But
there's so much – Spider-Man 3 has so many merits. You know, at the beginning of the film, Spider-Man's very full of himself and he's cocky.
Yeah.
And he gets knocked off his perch and he has to climb his way back.
Sure.
And after, you know, when he goes to save Mary Jane from, Sandman and from Venom, and he's just going back with his tail between his legs. He just knows he's going to get the crap kicked out of him, and he does. And then Harry Osborn shows up to save him, and they're fighting side by side.
Yeah.
That movie just brought the entire trilogy of Sam Raimi-directed Spider-Man movies full circle. And, I definitely did not like that middle part with emo Spidey, but it was such a satisfying conclusion to that trilogy. And I love Spider-Man 3.
I would love to see the comments right now because that's amazing.
I mean, they like the ideas.
Yeah.
I wasn't a fan of the butler suddenly revealing all this information about Norman Osborn. Your
father was hired. And another thing, he did this and then is it. And also.
Before we take another call, I do want to finish Nathan's question. So we didn't get your lightsaber Cody and Alex's.
Oh, my favorite lightsaber. Okay, now, even though The Empire Strikes Back, we all have firmly established here over the course of the last hour and a half,
It's
just like one of the greatest movies of all time. My favorite lightsaber is actually Luke's lightsaber from Return of the Jedi.
Nice.
So the green one, not the blue one.
I like the green because he made it himself. Remember, Vader was like, impressive. You made this yourself, my son. I'm very proud of you.
Yeah.
Cody? Alex, you got one? I'm the meat of a guy. Good.
Blue. it's blue, guys.
Thank you, Cody.
Got it.
Thank you. Are you sure it's blue? Alex? Yes.
Yeah, I'm a blue boy also.
Okay.
Wait. Cody. Cody, where do you stand on Spider-Man 3?
It's not great, Scott. It's got some scenes. I did watch it during my emo phase, though, so I related to it.
Did you learn the dance, Cody?
Oh, yeah.
Ooh.
No, I did not.
Aww. Well, maybe you should.
Aww. Had the same hair, though.
Of course you did. Like the sort of emo goth, like beaver thing
all
going on?
All the way down there. Mm-hmm.
Ooh.
Nice.
I need to see photos of that. Mm-hmm. So we got another call?
Yeah. Hold on. Wait for it, guys.
Wait for it.
We're going to get it.
There it is. There it is.
You are on Collider Live. Who are you? How are you doing?
It's Kevin from New York, and I'm not doing too bad.
Hey, Kevin. How's it going? Hey, what did you got for us today?
I guess caught a little bit of it earlier, and you guys just talking about, like, the comic book stuff, and I guess just offer, like, a civilized opposite end of the fence to Superman.
The movie?
Civilized. It's not a thing where it's like I attack him, but I completely get it. I think it might partly be generational for me.
Could be, yeah.
But for me, when I've gone back and watched those, and I did see them before Man of Steel, and I love Man of Steel.
Yes. Like, yes, Kevin, I do too.
When I watch that, I just feel like Superman, it just feels like he's especially in the first one, as it goes on, he betrays a lot of what makes Superman Superman, like one of the great one of the things I think that makes him so appealing is that he has the ability to be a god, but he actively chooses not to do it, even in the worst circumstances.
Yeah,
and then he, but and his father even tells him, like Jor-El tells him, like, don't interfere in this way with people's lives, and then he does it out of a degree of selfishness.
Mm-hmm.
So like that's always like my biggest hang up with that movie, because I do, there's plenty of it that I enjoy, and I'm not, and Reeve is a great Superman, but just it's that one at part of like a, how a creative decision can just like kill the momentum of a movie for me.
And I think it can also it's you read something completely different than mm-hmm. I did. Because what he did for me was out of love.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
exactly. It was because he needed to save and wanted to save Lois. And so he used those godlike powers to save Lois.
And he also established his own identity.
And established – yeah. Yeah. Stepped out of the shadow of Jor-El.
Bingo.
Wait, Kevin, what were you going to say?
No. I completely agree with that. And it's also like it's constructed in a way where – and this is going back to why I said why I don't – why I'm not going to be – why I don't knock anybody who – likes it or appreciates it.
Yeah, we understand.
I'm defensive.
Yeah. give me another minute, then I'll start screaming at you.
Okay, cool.
Give me back my money.
But, yeah, it's just because I don't know. It's just like because when you see some of the things, and I know comics are comics, and you have to do adaptations. Like, I'm one of the people who actually prefers the ending of the Watchmen film to the comic.
Yes.
Oh, interesting.
And because I think in the vein of what Alan Moore wrote, that works better.
Mm-hmm.
So in a way, Snyder out Alan Moore, Alan Moore. So
interesting. Yeah, very interesting.
Hot takes.
Well, thank you for the – you're not done. Please keep going. No, I love everything you're saying. So I agree with everything you're saying. Please keep talking.
But just with like Superman, because and it's like – He has lost everything, and I think there's like a great Spider-Man arc after Civil War that dealt with like he makes a deal with Mephisto. It's like, okay, you want your secret identity back? Okay, you can make this selfish. Can have this one piece of selfishness, but everything else you've gained by being selfless, you will now lose. And I think that's like a good way of sort of like twisting that on its head. And if it had been something like that, then I think maybe I'd be able to forgive it more.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I'm done.
Thank you for the call, Kevin.
Hey, thanks, dude. That was great. That was great and civil. Yeah.
I love it. Very interesting take on that.
You heard my
very interesting take on
that. I want to hear what you think, Craig. But really quick, I will have to say, and I've talked about this on the show before, is that it is true that a comic book is different than a film, right? Mm-hmm. And so when you're adapting comic book material, sometimes it's really cool to see it visually on the screen. Like, that's why I love Spider-Verse so much. But sometimes things don't translate as well.
Agreed.
Right?
Yeah,
so I actually agree that I really at first when I saw Watchmen for the first time, I was like, this is different, because as a huge fan of the comic. But after rewatching it, and especially the director's cut, it actually made more sense to me for a film adaptation.
Right. I thought the film adaptation was underrated. I thought it was pretty good, not great, but good. I thought they should have done a miniseries, which they are now doing. So
right.
All is well in the world.
The show is so good.
Yeah.
It's
so good.
It really is.
It's interesting on that too, because visually, how do you adapt a big squid attacking New York? And
exactly.
I love the way they've done it in the Watchmen
in the
series
show.
Because they don't have to put that in there; it's, you can reference it.
But you're right. Like, what works for one medium, comic books or even novels, may not work for another, movies or TV.
Sure.
What's
Absolutely.
Your take
on which part?
All of it.
All of it.
Yes, and.
Yes, I am.
Right there with you guys. I barely remember the Watchmen movie, to be honest. I have waited in line for like 10 hours, so I just read the graphic novel for the first time.
2009.
While I was waiting in line. That was before they had like reserved seating at every theater. And so I read the whole thing, and then I went into the movie, and I was surprisingly really bored. But I've always been under the impression that if I went back and watched it, I would probably like it. That's the vibe I've had with that movie, like reflecting back on it. But I do love the show. And I didn't really care about that it changed. I just wasn't into the movie that much, so I didn't even care that the ending changed. I wasn't my Watchmen.
I'm curious, though. I wonder after you watch the director's cut what you would think.
Everyone says about all Zack Snyder related things.
Yes. Hey, Ultimate Edition BVS is way better than the theatrical release.
I agree with that. I do agree with that. Actually, I didn't even watch the edition. I just watched all the deleted scenes. And then I went, oh, yeah, I could see how these scenes make the movie work a lot better.
Clark Kent is not even a character in the theatrical release.
No.
Like, you don't see Clark's journey at all, whereas you do see it in the Ultimate Edition.
And then
you actually get why they're fighting.
Yeah, the perspective of when Clark is learning about what Batman does, I was like, oh, now it makes sense why he has issues with Batman.
Correct.
As opposed to before, I'm like, what's your deal, man?
Well, I'm glad we agree. Do we got another call, Cody? There we go. Great sound.
I'm feeling very welcome here.
How many people are on hold?
You are on Collider Live. Hello, who are you?
My name is Steve. I'm from the UK, and I didn't realize I was going to go straight in because I'm watching you in the delayed, and I'm... Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
We love getting people from not the U.S. That's so fun. How are you?
It's always great.
What do you got for us today?
I cannot believe I just got... I know everyone says that shit, so I ain't going to say that. You know what? I watch you guys when it's quarter to eight in the U.K. at the minute. I came from work. The kids, the missus, I have to put up with this shit. I've put up with it for over a year. I can't believe I got through. They're not here. It's exciting they're not here to hear this shit. And I have no idea what you guys are talking about. Have you spoken about the Mandalorian yet? I got a little Yaddle Yoda theory. Look.
We did talk about the Mandalorian, yes.
We did talk about the Mandalorian.
Today.
Hopefully it was a little bit muffled there. We're not discussing the ending because of spoilers for everybody that might be listening or watching at home, just in case they haven't seen it.
Yada, yada, yada.
I love this guy.
Yeah.
You are officially Cody's favorite caller.
You know what? You guys are great. I'd like to go into history about how the fuck I've got into you, because that was a load of flame in my throat, man. That was disgusting. In the words of, you know, Roxy would hate this, I've just had a split. In the UK, it's split. That's just weed, man. That's just what you call weed. It's split.
Yeah,
you know,
man. Smoke one for us, man. Shit.
Wait, you're in the UK? So how far are you from Abbey Road?
Yeah, man.
Oh, yeah.
How far are you from Abbey Road?
I'm in North Park, which is about 40 miles away from London. It's about 35 minutes on the train.
Oh, okay.
Get on the tube, you're in Abbey Road, mate.
A big Beatles fan. Massive. Huge.
Yesterday.
Huge.
Have you seen yesterday? Scott.
Yes, I did see yesterday. I thought yesterday was a good film. I thought it could have been better. I thought they had a great idea.
Yeah.
Mm. It was a great concept. They could have done more with it, and instead it turns out to be a romantic comedy.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
The end of the film, no spoiler, the end of the film with the big reveal, that made the movie for me. So I thought it was a 3 out of 4 movie. I thought it was good, not great.
You know what the best part of that film was? That my 10-year-old little girl sat there watching me and go, oh, so all those songs, the Beatles were those. Yeah, mate. It's all bloody YouTube. I know you're YouTube, so that's really...
Oh my God! Thank you so much for calling. This is probably one of my favorite calls ever.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cheers, mate.
Serena, very much. You're great. You're doing a great job. You know, I think I listen to Christian during the day. I do a lot of podcasting at work, so you're doing great.
Well, that's very sweet. Thank you so much, and please call us again.
Cheerio.
That was
cheers, mate.
That was awesome,
Cody. Yeah. That's your favorite.
I don't know what was said.
Me neither.
I loved it.
I loved every minute of it.
It was the same poem. It sounded very cool.
Yeah.
Well, no, because because you guys know English is my second language. So when I hear other accents, because I've now that I moved to LA as an adult, you know, I got the California accent more so. But when I watch British television, I literally, like, Brennan, my husband, has to translate for me sometimes.
Yeah.
Like, if we watch Sherlock or something, I'm like, wait, what did they say?
Your English is amazing.
Thank you.
Yeah. It's so perfect.
Yeah, wow.
It's not perfect, but thank you.
We got another call.
Spanish is your first language?
Yeah. Welcome to Collider Live. You're on the line. What do you got for us? Who are you?
Guys, this is Luke Nelson calling again. How's it going?
Hey, Luke.
Luke, I'm your father.
There it is.
It's spotty. The signal is breaking up on me, so I can barely hear you, so I'm trying to find some better service.
Can you hear us now?
Yeah, I think so. But anyways, I want to talk about the James Dean shit.
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah.
If we could we turn the lights down in the room and Vangelis, please, Cody?
Sure.
Cody, please because follow directions from our caller.
If you go behind the curtain there, there's a little dimmer.
Is it really?
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah. Go right, the other way. Yep, there it is.
Because, all right.
Oh, wait a minute.
I want to talk about the reason why this is not just a bad thing for actors, but a bad thing for everyone in the future. So when they started to make movies, like, no one could imagine that, you know, 60, 70 years later, everybody is walking around with a camera in their pocket, basically.
Yeah,
right.
So we start now, and we're making copies of these actors to bring them back. But it doesn't stop there. Pretty soon, it's going to be copies of everybody.
Wow.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
And similar to the idea of being able to purchase a James Dean to be in your home to hang out with you. So this might start to be spooky, but these corporations are building profiles based on your data. So they know what you're looking at online, things that you like. So they have a pretty good idea of the person that you are. And then to take it a step further, we spend so much time just staring into these machines that have cameras on them that are taking a record of what you look like and what you sound like, whether you like it or not. Because we don't read the privacy policy agreement.
You're right.
You are correct.
You got it right about that.
Yes. Thank you for the call. That's a very interesting thing to think about because we're all going to be I love that he said copies, right? But
yeah.
Because we use the word clones or in this case replicants.
Yeah.
But we do throwback to what we were talking about earlier, holograms, right? Mm-hmm. Like the Joy thing in Blade Runner 2049, like right now this phone has all my information, has
everything.
All my photos. It has everything that you could possibly want that hopefully nobody ever sees.
Right.
But so they could, somebody out there with the technology could make a Dorina hologram, right?
Right.
Like that's totally possible. So yeah. So we are getting there at some point, and
yeah.
It's freaking terrifying.
Yeah.
Well, like when you're watching, the original Star Wars film, and they're showing the holograms.
Mm-hmm.
That was so cool in 1977, but in 2019, not so unique.
It's very true.
Oh,
so, oh my
is.
God, by the way,
there
is the title of the show,
the
guys.
There it is. Yeah. So, before we take another call, we got
to
talk about Friends, specifically because our girl Roxy Stryer is the biggest Friends fan I know.
Roxy would kill us if we didn't
if we
talk,
don't
about,
talk
this.
About it.
And
yes.
You know what?
Friends.
I'm very, very, very excited about this, too, because I'm a huge Friends fan. I could probably hang with some trivia on the Friends because I would just watch it. Every night. Every night now, it's in reruns. So the news is, yeah, keep going. Just pump the shit. Did you guys listen to the song? Did you buy the album like I did and listen
to
the song over
and
over?
I did have the CD.
I have the music video.
So, I know, it's kind of crazy.
So we're getting a Friends reunion, Mark.
We are getting a Friends
it's
reunion.
It's happening finally.
It's in the works. There's talking to not only the entire original cast but also the creators. And what they're talking about is a unscripted reunion. So we're not going to get like a Will and Grace thing if this all goes, if the deals are signed and the schedules are locked in. So it's probably going to be like a reunion special where they all sit around and tell stories.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
That's all you want. Like, because really, they have been – they've been dodged with questions about a reunion for the past 15 years.
Yeah.
So now that they're finally – looks like they're going to do some kind of a reunion – you know, like doing original content, like a reboot of the show, like they did with Will and Grace and so on, I think that's just opening up to a lot of unfair comparisons. But
yeah.
Sure.
Just talk about sharing memories. And you got to have Gunther there.
You got to have Gunther.
Serving coffee.
Smelly Cat.
You know, you're going to have, you know, they're probably going to be on a Central Perk set. Right. Because yeah. they all could fit on those couches and those chairs.
Yep.
It's going to be a lot of fun. Yeah. I'm excited about
Are
it.
Are you a huge fan, Greg?
Friends is my all-time favorite show.
Really? Are you serious?
My all-time favorite
so
show.
So, like, God, Roxy. I love that. Roxy yeah. would be Wait, very happy.
Greg.
Yeah.
Does it?
Does it?
Does it?
It does.
Score.
That is some great
so
right
does
there.
Not.
You guys are a bunch of nerds.
It yeah, so it does not.
See, that's what I'm talking about. This is like there are so many kind of memories from this, like Rachel getting together yeah. with Ross, then that happening, and get them
I have,
farther
I have
apart.
Three friend shirts. I love this. It is my all-time
What do you
favorite.
Love about it so much?
I think in every friend circle we have, like in real life, one of us is one of them.
Right?
Like, we all have shades. I've noticed my whole humor as – like when I was growing up, I was always called like the Chandler mm-hmm. in school. Like okay. I was very socially awkward, but I resorted to like – I remember watching the first season when Phoebe's dating a therapist and he says like you repress it with humor. I had a conscious effort growing up in the home I did. Of I'm going to do that when I go to school. Like, I literally just decided to do it.
Who played the therapist?
Oh, I know the face so well.
I got it for you.
Who is it? Who is it?
Fisher Stevens.
Oh, wow. Oh. Yes. Wow.
Damn.
Wait a minute. So could you be anymore like
Yeah.
Right.
I wanted to be Chandler. And then as growing up, when I first started doing YouTube, I channeled more of my Joey humor. And then now I've noticed in a relationship, I'm a lot like Ross.
So, yeah.
I'm like, yeah, you're responsible. I'm like Ross and I'm like all three of the guys combined, I noticed.
Yeah.
But then, so yeah.
It's interesting because I grew up, my family is huge fans of Friends. And we actually, speaking of the fact that this is my second language, I learned a lot of English through movies and TV, uh-huh. right? Like, I like listening to it. That's why probably I lost my accent a little bit.
Yeah.
You can hear it sometimes. But Friends is something we saw as a family growing up, and I have really fond memories of those times. What's bizarre, though, is that as I've gotten older, I don't like the show as much.
Oh,
it's
really?
It's not that I think it's special. It's just like I'm just like, okay, yeah, I like these characters. It was funny, but for some reason, I don't know. Well, not to me personally. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's a bad show. I think it's a good show. But I just don't relate to the characters as much as I used to.
See, now, I think that when you're going to – like Friends, I think, does hold up. Seinfeld, to me, doesn't hold up as much as Friends does.
Josh McCuga should be calling in.
That's weird because when I was a kid – and by the way, the lead singer of BTS said that they learned English through Friends as well.
There you go.
Wow. But yeah, when I was growing up, I just really loved Friends as a comedy. But then as I've gotten – every time I get older, I actually do relate with it more.
Oh,
I start to understand more of the struggles.
That's interesting.
Stuff.
I mean, we'll see. Like, I really like what they're doing, that it's not a reboot. This interests me more, that they're just going to be a reunion. They're going to be celebrating it.
Listen, you know what will really make it great? You know what's really going to make this Friends reunion great? Is that they actually do film a new episode with all CGI versions.
There it is.
And with that, you are on Collider Live. Who are you? How's it going?
Hey, guys, this couldn't have been a better segue because speaking of Friends, I wanted to say hey to my friend Greg Alba. What's up? It's Joel Reed.
It's Joel.
Los Angeles.
Hey, Joel.
Oh, that's awesome.
Hey, buddy.
Everybody.
How you doing, dude?
I'm doing great. I want to point out I called 150 times today to get in.
Oh, my
wow.
God.
Say what's up to Greg.
This there
my,
it is.
My girl, I got a comment.
It's my girlfriend's ex-boyfriend.
Oh, okay. Do you owe him, do you owe him money,
wow.
too?
I want to say that I think Spider-Man 2 is the best superhero movie of all time.
Bingo,
and
yeah.
Spider-Man 3 is the worst superhero
movie. Oh, what's this guy's name?
Joel.
Joel! Respectfully disagree.
Joel Reeves, actually.
It's not the worst. How can you say it's the worst? There are so many
everything for me, man.
Did you not see Superman 4, The Quest for Peace?
No,
that's the shittiest superhero
that's
movie
a good
of
point.
All time.
Yeah.
It sure is.
I did. I like it more than Spider-Man 3.
Oh.
Wow.
It is more fun in an awesomely bad way. Joe, you got a question for us today?
I want to know what you guys are going to watch on Disney Plus. Once The Mandalorian is over. The Mandalorian was great, but there's going to be that time period between the first Marvel stuff
and when The Mandalorian is done. So what are we supposed to be watching until then?
Take your
okay.
pick.
Thank you for the question, Joe.
30 seasons of The Simpsons.
Well, okay.
Which they've changed. Yeah. Did you hear they manipulated them a little bit? They got rid of some episodes, right? Like, didn't they get rid of the Michael Jackson episode?
They got rid of the Michael Jackson episode. I have to do some digging on this. I saw something that there was an edit, but I also heard there was some aspect ratio differences where it's like you can't it's not correctly put on there.
I watched three episodes just last night from the first season just to see if they remastered it, and there was moments where the camera is moving and it's distracting.
There's still some glitches.
There's plenty of content on Disney Plus to go through. First of all, you can watch 1979's The Black Hole.
Yes!
Which is
great score.
John Barry's score for The Black Hole is fantastic.
Oh, yeah, this is John Barry.
John Barry actually wrote Every Morning by Sugar Ray.
Yeah. John Barry. And Dances with Wolves.
The Black Hole is a great film. I mean, if you're looking, there's so much content on there. The Sound of Music, Mary Poppins, Fantasia.
Yeah. The Rocketeer.
The Cat from Outer Space.
Those classic movies.
Friday is
Escape from Witch Mountain?
Escape to Witch Mountain.
To Witch Mountain.
Yeah, 1974.
There it is.
Now, I want to know if they're going to have the Ewok movies on there.
Yeah, they should.
What about the holiday special?
The holiday special? Look, if you're going to have the prequels on there, sure, why not have the holiday special? Yeah.
Well, I'm trying to think. What about you, Mark? What are you watching other than Mandalorian?
I mean, I'm looking forward to revisiting the Clone Wars TV series to catch me up for when the new season drops.
What about non-Star Wars stuff?
Non-Star Wars stuff?
What?
How dare
sick
you?
Sick of talking about Star Wars.
What the hell
what
does
about
that mean?
Non-Star Wars?
I want to revisit a lot of Escape to Witch Mountain. I want to revisit watch The Rocketeer last night.
Great
holds
movie.
Up. Love it. I kind of want to see Endgame again. I've only seen it a couple times, and I would love to see that again. Some old Disney classics that I haven't seen. Black Hole, that's a number one right there. I got to see that.
Movie.
I forgot about Black Hole.
The Black Hole's great.
So, I mean, I'm going back to the animation stuff. That's I grew up on Disney Afternoon, all that stuff, and I have some of the DVDs already. Mm. But even really obscure stuff, does anybody remember Bonkers, just weird cartoons like Marsupilami, really weird shit from the 90s that's my favorite and probably why I'm such a weird kid.
I got Julie to look up from the wedding planning last night when the animated movies came up on the Disney Plus app. She was just wait, what? Really? She was had no idea. Yeah. So Cinderella was there, Little Mermaid was there, Lion King was there, Aladdin was there. The really great classic Disney animated movies. She got really excited.
Yeah, can't go wrong with Pinocchio, Sleeping Beauty. They're all
What's your favorite Pixar movie? Hands down, what is your favorite Pixar movie?
My first thought is Monsters, Inc.
Monsters, Inc.? Oh, my God.
Great.
Monsters, Inc. came out on November 2nd, 2001. What's your favorite Pixar movie?
Probably Up.
Up? Okay,
that's my
so that
second.
Was 2009. Yeah. I don't know the date. I think
Up
it was
and The Incredibles. They're in a battle for number
Ed
one.
Ed Asner is a family friend of mine.
Is he really?
Yeah.
Can you please tell him the most perfect casting, perfect vocal performance in any kind of anime? He was so good.
He was beautiful. Yeah. That movie
he was
beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Michael Giacchino won the score, won the Oscar for Best Score.
And it was
As
nominated for Best Picture.
Yes, it was.
Not animated.
Not
best.
Right. And so was Toy Story 3.
Toy Story 3 was. And Beauty and the Beast.
Love Wall-E.
Yes, Wall-E.
Wall-E's pretty great.
Wall-E. Wall-E.
It's so great.
See, I want to use Disney Plus to watch some of the Pixar movies. I missed Brave, and I didn't see The Good Dinosaur.
Good Dinosaur is good. It really is. I really enjoyed it. It had a rough go getting to theaters.
Those
but
are the
I
two
think
I
it,
missed.
Yeah.
The
good, Cody, Alex?
I'm a Wall-E guy myself.
Yeah.
Nice.
Alex?
Give me that Coco. Oh.
Yeah.
Coco.
Yes, if you want to cry hard, that's how you do it. Unfortunately,
we
have ran out of time, guys. But thank you so much for joining
thank
us, Scott,
so much.
Greg, Cody, Alex in the
awesome
booth,
beer.
Mark Riley. I am Darina. Roxy Star will be back tomorrow. I will see you guys next week. Have a wonderful week.
Woo.
Napa Know-How.
Get all the quality parts you need at your locally owned Napa.
Because right now, when you order from Napa online, you can pick up curbside at your local store in just 30 minutes. Or get your order delivered direct to your door with free one-day shipping and over 160,000 quality parts when you spend $35 or more. Quality parts delivered quickly and safely. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating stores, standard ground shipping and exclusions apply.
What's up? It's Kevin Hart. And with new rewards from Chase Freedom Unlimited, I now earn even more cash back, even on a beach getaway. I earn 3% of drugstores on beach snacks. These chips have some saying on them. I earn 3% on dining, including takeout, after a seagull eats all my chips. And I earn 5% on travel purchased through Chase, like a hotel room to hide from that seagull. Learn more at chasefreedom.com. Chase, make more of what's yours.
Account subject to credit approval. Restrictions, limitations apply. Offer subject to change. Cards are issued by JPMorgan Chase Bank, N.A. member FDIC.